Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Well, daggone if it didn't thorn in the side Thursday. Just trying that out periodically to see if it sticks. A theme that was kindly suggested to me on Facebook by Horst. Thorn in the side Thursday. An indirect reference, if you will, to a series of events in Joseph Heller's Catch-22. It is Thursday at the Horn. It's Thursday in a lot of different places, on at least this side of the planet. It's already Friday on the other side, so happy Friday to y'all. You know what? I'm in a good mood. I'm in a very good mood. I love it when I see activism having a real impact on the world around us. Big things, little things. It's truly inspiring. You know, a few days back, last week, maybe, Mark Morford had a column along the same lines. And lo and behold, a little something popped up today that just sort of reaffirmed that. Do you read Mark Morford regularly? And if you don't, why not? SFGate.com is where you'll find Mark Morford's twice-weekly musings. Notes and Errata is the name of the segment. Yeah, I find it, even when there's nothing in there that I can really make any use of on the show, shoot, I just read it to be uplifted or for a good cackle once in a while. But I'm in a good mood. I'm in a very good mood. And I admit, with last night being the first day back or first evening back from our massive exodus across America and into the blistering anvil of the sun that is the Las Vegas area desert. In the midst of talking about all that, I forgot to tell you quite possibly what is the best story to come out of the whole event. Now, let me preface this by saying that as Zatoichi mentioned when he came by to visit the Coal River Mountain Watch table there at Netroots Nation, he took one look at Agnes and said, "Bob, you married up." And I agree wholeheartedly. It's more than 17 years now that Agnes and I have been married, and I wake up every morning and go, "Oh, damn, she's still here." But I did. I married up. And she is a beautiful, beautiful woman. And neither of us are much in the way of TV watching. Especially not the sort of, you know, tawdry, you know, the stuff. Nighttime soap operas and so forth. You know, it doesn't do anything for us. We're far more intellectual than that, really. We like to watch shows on the lives of molecular biological beings. You know. But somewhere along the way, back in when it first became quite the craze, ABC's Desperate Housewives had a lot of people talking. And I looked at Agnes and I said, "You know, you bear a passing fair resemblance to..." And she took one look and said, "I do not." "Oh, yes, you do. It's creepy." So in some sort of, I suppose, karmic or universal whatever, this was all confirmed in Las Vegas. One afternoon, Agnes had taken Doodle and Ferg and Margie down to the pool. They had a nice pool there. Even had sand. Wow, really? In Vegas? In the desert? They had sand? Well, bust my buttons. No, they had sand by the pool and everything that you could get on your feet and into your shoes and your clothes and bring up and get into your bed and made it nice and gritty, just like being at the beach. But, no, I digress. Agnes took the kids down to the pool, and she came back, and everybody was just abuzz. And Agnes said, "You are not going to believe this." And I said, "Well, no, it's you. I probably will. What's happened? A talking aardvark has come up out of the desert and given you the secrets of the universe. Anything can happen in Agnes's world. I'm still waiting. It's a couple of years now, but I'm still waiting for that lion that got loose in West Virginia to come up and start rubbing itself against her leg and purring and you know, be your kitty cat. These things happen. She's one of those, Agnes is one of those sort of semi-magical beings. So she says, well, we were all just sitting at the pool. The kids were playing in the water, and I was sitting there minding my own business, and this matronly woman next to her looks over at her and says, you know, I really ought to get her to tell the story. Hang on a minute. There will be a moment. There will be a moment of radio silence. But you know what? This is the internet. So, you know, it's not like we're missing out any ad time for Preparation H. Hang on a minute. I'll be back. So I just walked away and said, hey, Agnes, you got to come tell this. And what did she say? What did you say?
I don't
want to. I don't want to. But you got to.
Get better soon, Donald. I love you.
So she's sitting by the pool, right? And this matronly visitor to Vegas is sitting next to you, right?
Right.
Honey, this is not a cross-examination.
All right.
And she looks at you and says, and what was it she said? Are you...
No, she said, are you here in disguise? And I kind of looked around thinking, you know, somebody has to be here other than me. But no, she was speaking
to thought she was talking to someone else.
I was hoping, because it wasn't the first time.
And this was after your big green Amazonian drink had all worn off and everything, right?
I didn't really drink that thing.
Yes, you did.
No, well.
Not all at once.
No. Over about 3 days. Yeah, I can make it last. But she keeps on and she said, I know who you are. And I'm thinking, you know I'm from West Virginia?
No. I know. No, we got to do the voice. I know who you are. Just like you told the.
She's whispering to me.
I know who you are.
And she's convinced I'm Marcia Cross. But I'm not. My belly button hasn't been pulled up to my forehead yet.
No, but that's not how it worked out.
And I explained. I'm not. I'm Agnes Kincaid.
No, I know who you are. It's okay. Your secret's safe with me.
But she was sweet, so I signed Marcia Cross's name.
Because she asked you for her autograph...
4 times.
No, really. My name is Agnes Kincaid. Serious.
And she winks at me and goes, yeah, I know. It's okay. So I guess I was in the witness protection program while in Vegas. So what happens in Vegas should stay in Vegas unless you take Bob along with you, and then it all puddles.
How can you not tell this story?
Does anybody like to explain things like this? No, because it only happens when they take me out of my cage and let me loose.
Well, but like I said, she's a magical creature. Agnes is.
I'm a desperate housewife is what I am. Does anybody want to be equated with that? A desperate housewife? Desperate mother? Yes.
She's fabulously wealthy and fabulously famous.
And I'm fabulously poor and fabulously non-famous, and I like to stay the non-famous way, and there is no wealth, so I'm not looking towards that.
So in the course of 1 week, you got equated with Marcia Cross of Desperate Housewives. It's okay. It'll be our secret. I won't tell anybody. And I get the email telling me that after the appearance on Amy Goodman's Democracy Now, that I look like Glenn Beck. I think Agnes came out on the winning end of that.
I'm sorry, Marcia. I'm sorry I signed your name, but evidently they love you in Vegas, and there's a lot of women that watch your show. There you go.
You see? But I would have given anything to have been there. Oh, my God. No, it sounds like an episode of I Love Lucy or something. No, really. I won't tell anybody that you're here. It'll be our secret. And she went, and you just know that later she went fluttering up to, oh, my God, I met Marcia Cross. Oh. And she hates thinking that she looks like her, but she kind of does. The photo in the chat room doesn't really do her justice as far as that resemblance is concerned. So, what a... What an amazing... These things happen all the time. And it's just a part of the magic of life with Agnes. And it certainly does make things all the more... There's never a dull moment. Never. But beyond that, no, it's a good day. It's a pleasant day because if you recall last night's program, you'll recall that we focused rather a significant amount of time on this greenwash job from this phony baloney outfit called the American Wetlands Foundation. You remember the one that was founded and set up entirely with dirty oil money to sort of greenwash the dirty oil industry? Sure. Well, guess what? You made a difference. You had an impact. I know a lot of you started commenting and sending the story that the whole thing was based on, the story at Huffington Post, authored in part by Jerry Cope. You started sending the story around and you started asking questions. And lo and behold, guess what? Sandra Bullock, the first face seen in this greenwash ad, from Women of the Storm and the American Wetlands Foundation, they've been caught out. They've been caught out for participating in this greenwash campaign. It's really quite inspiring. And lo and behold, Sandra Bullock is the first one who has immediately, as soon as she found out about it, gotten away from it. Her representatives told Think Progress that Ms. Bullock will immediately ask for her participation in the PSA, the video, to be removed until the facts can be determined. This is the quote. Ms. Bullock was originally contacted through her attorney. What did I say? What did I say last night? I said, I'll bet you none of these people had any idea what the organization was they were dealing with. Ms. Bullock was originally contacted through her attorney to be part of the PSA in order to promote awareness of the oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico. That was the pitch that was made. At no time was she made aware that any organization, oil company or otherwise, had influence over Women of the Storm or its message. We have immediately asked for her participation in the PSA to be removed until the facts can be determined. Her commitment to the Gulf region has been apparent for many years, and she will continue to pursue opportunities that will bring awareness and support to the plight of the Gulf region. but she did the right thing. Now it remains for John Goodman, for Emeril Lagasse, Peyton Manning, Eli Manning, Drew Brees, that baseball player for the Florida Marlins, whose name I don't know. Sorry, I don't follow the Marlins. Just sorry. Reds fan, Pirates fan, you know. Yeah, I know, it's tough. Braves fan. Don't follow the Marlins. But it follows for them. Lenny Kravitz? Dave Matthews? Get out! Get away from this thing! It's as filthy and dirty and nasty as the oil that coats the Gulf and the plumes that ride underneath its currents. Get out! And they've even got the Americans, this article even has the America's Wetland Foundation in a tizzy. Upon inquiry from Huffington Post, the America's Wetland Foundation, which is funded exclusively by Big Oil, its founder and its international worldwide sponsor is Shell Oil. That they call themselves the International Sustainability Sponsor, as well as Chevron, ConocoPhillips, ExxonMobil, Citgo, British Gas, Spectra, Hornbeck, the American Petroleum Institute, which is comprised solely, almost of exclusively, of global warming deniers. All of that money, according to the America's Wetlands Foundation, all of those monies, quote, were for purely scientific or ecological functions. Interestingly enough, the original article at Huffington Post pointed to the fact that Women of the Storm, their executive director, is married to the executive director of the America's Wetlands Foundation. Now, here's the fun part. That's not the guy who came out and made the statement. Oh, no. No, this time the statement was made by Sidney Coffey, who is a senior advisor for America's Wetlands. Sidney Coffey said, quote, "We want BP to pay every damn penny that they should be paying and more." There's only one problem. There's not a single millisecond of the RestoreTheGulf.com video campaign that even mentions BP or BP paying, what's the quote, what they should, every damn penny they should be paying and more. Makes me feel good when I see things like this. Huffington Post on the follow-ups noting, Foundation officials acknowledged to HuffPost that oil companies such as Exxon and BP have given donations to the group, but they insisted that those donations were for purely scientific or ecological functions, noting that the companies have been donors for many years. Really? Many years? Think that might buy anything? Even subconsciously? Moreover, the officials stressed their campaign did not revolve around getting taxpayers to pick up the tab for coastal cleanup following the Gulf oil spill. Rather, what the organization wanted from the government was a long-term commitment to restoring the Gulf's wetlands. It couldn't be further from the truth, Sidney Coffey, senior advisor for America's Wetlands, said of the charges being leveled against her group. Ah, she's a she, Sidney. That's one of those girl Sidneys. We want BP to pay every damn penny that they should be paying and more. The $20 billion escrow account set aside by BP, we definitely want a piece of that. All we're saying is that as that process goes through, a portion of those funds be put into coastal restoration. We've long advocated for a national commitment toward these wetlands. It's because of federal actions taken by Congress that we have all this sentiment channeled into the Gulf. Do we take money from oil companies to do these kinds of initiatives and raise awareness? You bet we do. They need to be paying and they need to be at the table. No, they don't need to be at the table. They're done. Pay the money and get out. That shouldn't be too terribly hard to figure out. They don't deserve a seat at the table. They made the mess. When baby breaks the cookie jar trying to pull the extra cookie out of the jar and the jar lands on the floor and breaks into a million pieces, do you leave baby there to pick up the pieces? No, you get baby out of the way. Because baby will just make it worse. Same thing with BP. Uh, Oh, this is a massive, massive the media pushback. Let's see. Val Marmillion is managing director of America's Wetland Campaign. There's Val. We were just shocked to see this type of criticism. The board is totally benign. Trying to make it appear that oil companies who had given to the group had no influence over the group. I guess that's kind of like what BP going out and trying to hire every scientist along the Gulf Coast, right? And getting them to sign agreements saying that they won't talk about any of their findings until at least the government's done with its case against BP? We are not at all happy with the BP spill, and we've been working with the industry to say that. Really? Working with the industry to say you're not happy about BP? You need the industry's permission? Oh, this whole thing stinks. Isn't it just awful when the greenwashers get caught in their greenwashing? Well, I suggest we continue. We don't let go of this thing, and we hang them out to dry. Because this is some ugly, dirty, nasty laundry. But it's because of your action and the actions of a lot of other people that this thing has come burbling to the surface. And it's a good thing. BP, this again, Val Marmillion, he says that BP only gave a small amount to America's wetland. We are still waiting for further definition as to what small amount means. So, the job is not over. Sandra Bullock, I'm proud of. Little golf clap for Sandra Bullock. Not so happy with John Goodman, Harry Shearer, Eli Manning, Peyton Manning, Drew Brees, that Florida Marlins baseball player, Lenny Kravitz, Dave Matthews, Dr. John, Emeril Lagasse, still waiting on them to get a clue. Hope we don't have to wait too terribly long. Indeed, I hope we don't. So, it's a good thing. We've got something we've got something we can be proud of. Sustained and combined action that got the attention of the nation, focused on a dirty bit of fraud. And you know what? We need to stay focused on it. Keep pushing this. Pull that video. You know, over at thinkprogress.org, if you go over there, you can still play that video, the audio of which I played for you last night. Those greenwashers need to pull it. Pure and simple. Plain. Seems pretty easy to figure out to me. I'm pretty sure it is with you as well. But that's just the beginning for this evening. We've got a ton of other stuff as well, as I'm sure you more than realize. Your phone calls, of course, are always a big part of this entire process, and you are welcome to join in. The phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, 304-658-3, 3333. Jump right in with whatever's on your mind. Like I said, there are other stories out there. It's all open. It's wide open for your consideration. We will take a little break and come back. Lines, like I said, are open. Email. Oh, Bob, don't forget the email. Email rolls into Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, @gmail.com. And if you've never tried the chat room before, you're welcome to jump in and have a go at that. I think, it's a nice crowd we've got in there and some... some darn good conversation. So we will come back with your thoughts as well as other stories to roll out the evening. Right here on America's listener-supported liberal voice. Right here on the Horn.
Don't give up.
Oh, isn't that nice? A little something from Peter Gabriel, Don't Give Up. And, you know, really, that works with the theme of tonight's show. Let's go to the phone straight away and see who we've got. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, what's up, Bob?
Hey, what's going on?
Well, first of all, before I go on my spiel, being a Reds fan ain't so bad this year.
Well, no, it's just hard most of the time.
It's not like being a Yankees fan where, you know, your owner's got pockets so deep you threw a pebble into him, you'd never hear it. Go kaplunk.
Well, that's the truth, and you know, one of the things that disturbs me as a bit of a baseball fan lifelong is that effectively what baseball is doing, it's doing to itself, and what its ownership is doing to itself is creating a sub-tier minor league within the major leagues. Because, you know, there's that money-wise, there's no way that the Brewers, the Reds, the Pirates, you know, the other small market teams,
or even the Cardinals for that matter,
yeah, can compete. So they wind up getting talent that they develop through their farm system sucked off to the Yankees, the Braves, you know, the Dodgers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
And not even the Braves anymore, because one of the things I find so ironic about media deregulation, Ted Turner lost control of TBS and TNT. If you've ever noticed, there's not any baseball games on TBS anymore.
Oh, no, and that used to be the one nice thing, is that when the rest of during the summer hours, when the rest of television was a cesspit in the wasteland, you could always count on TBS would have a Braves game at least.
Oh, yeah, and I remember the Braves, back when I was a kid, I was born in 1980, the Braves were so horrible. I remember watching Braves games at home, if it was on like during a Saturday afternoon, because, you know, the Reds were playing them, there'd be hardly anybody in the lower tier, hardly anybody in the second tier of that cookie-cutter stadium, but the third tier would be packed. And they'd focus in on it, and it'd be nothing but sunbathers.
Oh, I remember the days very well. In fact, I was a young radio guy at CNN Radio in those late 80s. And back then, you know, Ted Turner still owned CNN. Ted Turner still owned the Braves. And one of the little perks of working for CNN, because God knows the salary wasn't one, one of the perks was that you got 20 free Braves tickets every year.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, you'd look around the newsroom, and you knew there were a bunch of people who were never going to go. And you'd say, hey, can I have your allotment? I want to take my friends to the ball game this Saturday. And so three or four times during the year, you'd go. And, you know, once you got your tickets, you'd just walk down behind the first base dugout because there wasn't anybody there in the first place.
Yeah.
And it was a great time. Did it a bunch.
Oh, yeah. And one of the things I used to hate about the Braves were they were basically in the 90s. The National League version of the Yankees, except they never really won a lot of World Series. And we used to give there was a guy we went to high school with, probably the class asshole, and we used to give him shit about that all the time. And that was always funny to us, but, it's a good year this year to be a Reds fan. They're winning, they got great young arms, and you know what, you have to savor to flavor, because we're not, you know, the Yankees or the Red Sox. We can't afford to do this every year.
No.
We can't afford to pay $70 million to have a chat with a guy in Japan about whether or not he wants to come play for us, like the Red Sox did a few years back. And Major League Baseball's doing this at their own demise, because Major League Baseball ain't as big as the National Football League. And now the NBA's going down that same path, and college basketball and the NHL are now rejoicing because now they're going to get those fans back.
Yeah. And baseball just toddles along. It's like the owners of baseball are standing there saying, stop us! Please help! Somebody stop me before I spend again!
Well, they're so damn dumb. Hell, George Bush was considered a good baseball owner.
Dear God.
That's how dumb they are. You remember that?
Yeah. I do.
And remember when Steinbrenner died and all these ex-players were fawning over him? I'm like, guys, if Steinbrenner paid me the amount of money he gave them, I'd probably have a positive opinion about him, too. And the horrible stuff I'd probably laugh about later on. oh, yeah, you know, George come in every day for lunch, and there'd be a fresh baby on his plate just cut up, ready to go for him to throw some soy sauce on, maybe some wasabi. Hey, George, how's the baby today? That's one of them Latino babies, not as good as the white ones, but, you know, what can you do? They're in season.
I know. And you've just pissed off all the Yankees fans.
I know, but I guess.
Hey, I gotta tell you a Cincinnati story, though.
All right.
On our way back from Vegas, we flew Vegas to Cincinnati and Cincinnati to Charleston. And lo and behold, there in Covington, Kentucky, at the Cincinnati International Airport, there is a Gold Star chili.
Oh, yeah.
And so, I you know, in that great Tony Bourdain tradition of eat what the locals eat.
Yeah.
I, by God, got my girls each their own plate of chili five-way.
Okay, that's pretty good. I always have chili dogs with, you know, chili conies with lots of hot sauce, heavy onion, lots of hot sauce.
Well, a coney came with each of theirs, and the boy and I each had a coney.
Yeah.
And yes, great big stripes of hot sauce right down the middle of it.
Oh yeah, it's the only way to eat it. I mean. Yeah, not only that, it's good for you. It keeps the bowels good.
But there's like something approaching warfare between Gold Star and Skyline, right?
Oh yeah, Gold Star is sort of the pop up because Cincinnatians love chili conies. We call them conies. We don't call them chili dogs. We call them conies. And I consider myself a Cincinnatian because I was born and raised between Dayton and Cincinnati. So. You know, I can always claim both cities. And there's a not big enough market that Gold Star pops up. In fact, there's people literally in this region that say, I'm a Gold Star man. No, I'm a Skyline guy. Or, you know,
right, exactly,
like
yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm glad you like that. Yeah, Anthony Bourdain has a hard time with it. I gotta tell you,
I was not ready for that big old dose of allspice in my chili.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I like it. Do I cook chili like that? No. I cook Texas-style chili, all meat, no beans,
yeah.
Heavy onions.
See, when I've got the money to splurge, my chili recipe is to die for because I go old school. I buy the dried hot chili peppers.
That's how I do it, too.
And
I got an old coffee grinder that I use just for that.
Yeah, see, I use an ancient Foley food mill. And I submerge the chili peppers in boiling water and save the juice and rehydrate the dried chilies. And then I run them through a food processor and make a pulp out of it. And then I run that pulp through the Foley food mill to get rid of all the, you know, the outside skins of the chilies are just unchewable, undigestible. And so I make my chili sauce that way. And then add my garlic and my onions and all kind. And then for the meat, I slow braise a brisket instead of hamburger.
Ah. Okay.
And shred that seasoned brisket up into the. And man, oh, what a pot of chili that is.
See, I just buy some ground round, you know, brown it up, pulverize those dried out arbol chili peppers, and just dump them in there. And also, I don't buy tomato juice. I buy canned tomatoes and take a blender and just liquefy them.
Yeah. Yeah, no. It's got to have substance. It's got to have, you know, meatiness beyond the meat itself.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I cook it the Lady Bird Johnson way, which is basically you don't skim off or drain the grease right away after you brown the meat. You basically pour in the juice and the spices, and you let it simmer for an hour, and then you skim off all the see-through liquid off the top. That's all the fat.
Yeah, something similar when I do the parboil roast or the braising of that big brisket, because you get all those lovely beef juices and you marry that with the chili sauce that you've got there. And oh wow, yeah. Sorry,
oh, yeah.
Here it is late July, and we're burning up here. You know, no more dry heat of the Vegas desert, but it's all, it's all wet and humid here. It had big pop-up thunderstorms today and stuff, and I'm talking about chili. What's wrong with me?
I got, you know, Well, I guess because it's football training camp just started for the NFL, and we're all, you know, already thinking about what we're going to cook for this winter.
Well, see, that's like me. It's we'll soon turn to August. Ferg will start his first year of high school football.
Oh, that's good. What's he going out for?
I have convinced him that, and they're pretty fair about it up at the high school. They'll let you walk on to whatever position you want to try your hand at. So
okay.
him being fairly mobile and fairly intelligent and left-handed, he's going to go out for QB on the offensive side and go out for free safety on the defensive side.
That's pretty good. Always like safeties. Oh, if we're talking about safeties, we got rest in peace, Jack Tatum.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, man. Probably one of the all-time greatest safeties ever. But he broke the unwritten rule of he didn't really break it. He just never apologized for what happened. Then he reminded us of the really, really dark side of football. And he made us all feel bad, and he never got the acclamation he deserved after he retired.
True.
You know, because the only people that give him any honest respect are hardcore Ohio State fans like myself, mainly because I grew up in Ohio, and Oakland Raiders fans. But anyway,
I figured free safety would give Ferg a chance to see the play develop and go out and just slobber knock somebody.
Oh yeah, well they're the only defensive backs usually of any brains.
Well, there's no way he could. And see, he was wanting to go out for wide out and stuff like that. I said, son, you're not going to be able to outrun the corners of the teams you play. And I wasn't being mean to him or anything.
Yeah,
but
I know.
If this makes any sense, he's quicker than he is fast.
Not a lot of football people, coaches, I'm surprised don't even know the difference between being quick and being fast. I had coaches in high school that didn't know the difference. Now, it turned out later, the worst thing for a football coach is for that football coach to have been really successful.
Yeah.
I've always found.
It's like baseball, you know, very seldom do the great players make great managers.
Yeah, because basically, talent, for the most part, you're born with, especially in basketball. You know, you're born to be a basketball player. You just develop into it naturally. You know, there's not a lot of work or anything to make you, like, really spectacularly great. I mean, you can be in really good shape and really strong and all that stuff, but really, you're born with court vision. You're born with that extreme coordination and that foot speed and those moves and everything else. Baseball and football, almost the same, but not as extreme. You could work yourself if you have all the physical assets into being a really good lineman or a really good linebacker, but not really for quarterback. You know.
Yeah. I mean, I just don't want to, and this is, he's not big enough to play on the line.
Oh, no, I was a lineman in high school.
So was I to the extent, well, mostly I was a bench warmer, but yeah, when it was practice time, I was on the practice squad and got the snot knocked out of me going both ways. By the first string, but he's not big enough to be a lineman and marginal for being a linebacker. But, you know, he'll continue growing. Shoot, by the end of this year, he'll be taller than I am, and I'm 6'2", so, yeah.
Okay, that's real good. My dumb luck when I was in high school, nobody grew after, none of the guys I knew grew after 7th grade.
Well,
our quarterback was the same height he was in 7th grade.
My shoe collection is finally safe because his feet are now bigger than mine.
Oh, yeah, mine were like that when I was 12 years old.
He shot past my size 12s. He's into a 13 now, and you know, you can't keep him in a pair of shoes. It used to be that they wore out before he blew through them. Now he blows through them before they wear out.
I was like that too when I was a kid. Now as an adult, now my foot doesn't grow any bigger. I don't have that problem anymore.
I just couldn't keep shoes on my own feet because he kept taking them.
Oh yeah.
Sheesh. But it'll be an interesting year, and I just want him to have the opportunity to, and then springtime have a run at baseball and see if he can learn to pitch, It's a shame. Oh, yeah. It's a shame to waste that southpaw arm.
Oh yeah, especially in baseball. There's left-handed pitchers are just such a rare commodity these days. Oh, at any time.
Yeah, well, you know, when he was tiny, 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 I would roll the ball to him on the floor to just play. And eventually he started picking it up with the left hand and sending it back and sending left hand, left hand, left hand. And I looked at Agnes and I said, honey, we may have a retirement plan.
Yeah.
God, I'm awful.
Well, there was a guy, his son was a dumbass, but he was a pitcher for the Cardinals, and his son went to a restaurant, got really loaded, and they tried to call a cab for him, and he told him to go F himself, and ended up getting himself killed in a drunk driving accident. And what was really stupid was like, oh, they got to remove beer from locker rooms. Why? Because this guy got drunk in a restaurant.
Oh, I remember that.
And that just sounded, it was so puritanical of American sports writers to say the stupid stuff. But eventually it went away, thank God. But the really stupid thing was the guy's dad sued the restaurant, the trucking company that his kid hit with his car. Because basically they were towing a car away off the side of the road, and he basically veered off the side of the road, hit the car that they were towing and the tow truck. So he's also suing the owner of that car and the tow truck and the State Highway Patrol in Missouri. I'm like, this guy's meal ticket just died. That's why he's so pissed.
Mm.
You know, and then I just lost all respect for him because,
have you seen the video with all the celebrities in it, the Restore the Gulf video?
I heard it on the air,
can't for the life of me figure out who that Marlins player is, and it's driving me nuts.
I don't know, but on to that, I was when you played that, I've had this Bill Hicks set just rolling in my head in a constant loop for the past month or so. Basically, when he gets up on stage and says, "Oh, if you're in
marketing
or advertising, please kill yourself."
Yeah, that's not a joke. No, I mean it.
Because it's basically infected every aspect of my life. And when I saw when I heard that ad you played last night, that's what popped into my head. Because these guys are really, I mean, they're just destroying everything. They are the destroyers of all things good. They're legalized sociopaths. Because they give sociopaths something to do.
Well, anybody who's watched the A&E series Mad Men.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a nice little snapshot of a bygone era. But that, you know, oh, that, and the Bill Hicks bit you're talking about, oh, that's a good, ooh, that angry dollar, that's a good dollar.
Oh, yeah. Because I'm really starting to loathe these guys. I mean, they're just sociopaths. Yeah, and it's instead of locking them in a prison somewhere so they can't harm us or affect us, you know, we throw suits on them, give them laughable business degrees, and thrust them upon the rest of society. So that way they can shill for big oil companies and greenwashing attempts or market arsenic-based baby food or whatever shit there is that, you know, we really don't need and is bad for us. They're going to hustle it for us. Have you ever read Hunter S. Thompson's unprinted novel, The Rum Diaries?
Yes.
Where he talks about when he first arrived in Puerto Rico and he found himself in a den of hustlers. He said he wanted to whack them on the head with a briefcase and give them bumps and stuff. That's how I've always felt about salesmen.
I had Hunter S. Thompson with me the whole time. Yeah, I was in Vegas. I couldn't go without him.
Yeah, I had him with me too after I got out of my arthroscopic shoulder surgery about a month ago.
And just to go. because you really do. Until you've been a first-timer there, you don't understand the usage, how easily words like beast and monster come to your come to the tip of your tongue.
Oh, I got that. Because after I watched that movie, they because I've never read the book, and that's always been a big mistake of mine, but I watched the movie, and I basically got the overall gist of Hunter S. Thompson's message. And they used to have on what used to be now what's now real TV, used to be court TV, they had this reality show about this wild, ridiculous pool bar in Las Vegas. Basically, all the guys there were on HGH and looked like Jersey Shore from hell. and it was in that hot sun, and they were every bit the real-life reptiles as that bar scene in the movie.
Yeah.
You mean where the
acid's kicked in?
Oh, yeah, and basically he sees it as the parabolic world it is. You know, and I said the exact same damn thing he said in that bar. And he says, holy Jesus, somebody's feeding alcohol to these damn things. I said, there's no way in hell I'd go to this place. And when I was all effed up out of my mind after the surgery, the intro to that movie had another meaning to me. And when I, if I ever go out to Vegas, you know.
Yeah, this is bat country.
Yeah. Yeah, that's going to have another meaning for me. But, you know, to each his own. And also, Vegas is not even the same Vegas it once was. It's now corporatized Vegas. It's like you were talking about last night, the $10 minimum blackjack hands. It was never like that in Vegas before the corporations bought it all.
No, out. You know what? The mob had a nice little racket going there, and it was legal and everything. And then imagine that. The corporations are more rapacious than the mob.
Yeah. Well, Mike Malloy once talked about the Bush crime family and said basically they're like the Sopranos about the humor and the class. And, yeah, they're actually somehow more rapacious.
Well, that's like watching The Godfather. I'll watch it anytime it's on TV, even though it's censored all the hell. But I'll watch it and Agnes and I were watching it one evening and I said, you know, the thing is, this is a morality play. This isn't, you know, I mean, it's all sort of wrapped up in the guise of a mob drama, but it's a morality play. Because nobody gets it who doesn't have it coming to them. And the thing is, at the end of it, you realize that, you know, we've all got it coming to us.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And, you know, because it was never $10 blackjack hands or whatever the equivalent for it was.
I just looked at it and I thought, you know, hey, guys, if I sit down and play, I'll lose the $10.
Yeah.
Just let me take a few minutes losing it. You know, let me have a cigarette and an ashtray while I'm sitting there, you know, not counting cards.
Oh, yeah, and Bartkop wrote about this years ago, 2003, because basically we had a lost decade in the 2000s, in the aughts, whatever the hell you want to call it. And they're already jacking up the prices on hotel rooms and everything else. It was like, because he got an email, and it was like some ridiculous price for a hotel weekend package. It was like $700 or something ridiculous like that. And he in the photo had this man and basically with his arms wrapped around a beautiful model. And Bartkop wrote, gee, you're going to give me one of those, too, at that price?
Yeah, for that kind of money? Right.
Yeah. And I was like, these idiots
the most frustrating thing for me is, you know, on the one night when we did go out to, you know, see, because, you know, at least walk down the strip. You can't even walk down the strip anymore.
What's going on there?
They've got all these pedestrian overpasses back and forth across Las Vegas Boulevard so that it becomes a Herculean effort just to get out on the strip. And just to go, you know, just to go up and down and see the lights and the flashing and yada, yada, yada. No, because the pedestrian, you know, the shuttle drops you off at Bali and Paris, and you go up the overpass over to the Bellagio, and then you can turn left into the Bellagio or right into the into Caesar's Palace. You can go downstairs long enough to watch the Bellagio fountain show, and then but then you can't cross the street. You can't go out on the sidewalk. There are no... And so you have to wend your way back up, go through Caesar's Palace, down an escalator, and you can finally, after spending an inordinate amount of time negotiating that that rat maze, you finally wind up out on the sidewalk, at which point you go, screw it, not doing this anymore, and start trying to find start trying to find the pickup for the shuttle to get you back to the Rio.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean, you can't go there. I mean, I have no idea what the show ticket prices were because it just seemed ridiculous to even ask. I mean, I was getting notes from people saying, hey, you got to try Fat Burger while out west. You got to go to In-N-Out Burger. Blah 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 blah. We were isolated on an island inside the Rio, and there really was no opera because the cab ride, you know, a cab ride to the downtown onto the strip was. $10-15 with tip one way. And, you know, who can do that? I mean, I guess people who go with $10,000 in their pocket can do that, but I couldn't.
Yeah, and what they don't understand is that's what's basically priced. That's what's really hurting Vegas, because Vegas has been hurting for the past few years.
Well, and it doesn't help to have the kind of convention experience that we had.
Oh yeah,
because you know we were in Pittsburgh 2 years ago and all those guys, it was, you know, how can we make this how can we make this better for you? And in Vegas it was screw you. The folks at Netroots Nation couldn't get an internet connection. I mean, it was a blogging convention, for God's sakes, and the people at Netroots Nation couldn't get the viable wireless service to the people who were attending the convention. A whole bunch of people pulled up on the first day and just left. You know,
yeah.
How can you ask bloggers to come and blog about stuff when, you know, because the in-room internet inside the Rio didn't work. You could pay for it, but you couldn't get it. And then the wireless down in the convention area didn't work. And so a lot of people opted to go to their cell phone carrier's internet for a connection, and like AT&T's wireless was overloaded. It was a real mess.
Basically, Vegas, from what I've heard from people online, and yeah, basically it ain't the same town it used to be. I thought, well, you know, it's grown a lot bigger. And like, no, it's not as, you know. People, tourist friendly as it used to be.
No, now like the staff in the hotel, all the you know, the bartenders and frankly the gambling table, the table game staff and all of those people just walking around, you could tell they were really, really friendly.
Oh yeah.
The
I'm not taking anything away from them.
No, the desk staff at the hotel didn't give a damn.
Oh yeah.
And frankly, the service staff down there, you know, backstage of the Rio and stuff, didn't give a damn either.
Well, yeah, because basically, it's a corporate model, which is basically, well, it's a W.C. Fields scam, you know, never cheat an honest man. Basically, they're now at Rule 2, never give a sucker an even break.
Yeah, and they leave Don't Smarten Up a Chump. To everybody else.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I feel like, you know,
yeah,
that's a really handy
rule.
You know what? You can live by those three rules.
Oh,
you really
yeah.
can.
And that's what I've told, because I've been using that to explain to people how business works. And, you know, three easy rules. And whoever thought of bringing that up one night on the horn, they really need a toaster or a pat on the back or something. Because ever since you guys, I don't know who was it brought that up, but I've actually become a big W.C. Fields fan once I heard that.
No, that's me. I find it a lot more easy to live morally using W.C. Fields' three commandments than using the ten in the so-called Bible.
Oh yeah.
Because you know what, that first one covers all bases. You cannot cheat an honest man.
Oh yeah.
Because an honest man will recognize that in anything that looks too good to be true probably is, that nothing is free, that everything has to be paid for.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, so you know, there you have it. This has been a wonderful conversation, but I gotta roll on and hit a couple more blinking lights. Don't be a stranger, okay?
All right.
Take care.
Bye.
And if you figure out who that Marlins player is, let me know. That's driving me nuts.
Okay.
All right. See ya.
Bye.
Bye now. And on we go. No. Ah, you guys give up too easy. So we will come back with the second hour of the program. Which is, let's see. What we can look forward to in the rest of the program. Just a couple of teases. The people who suffered from the after effects of trying to rescue and clean up 9/11, the Republican Party just told them to go piss up a rope. And, by the way, there's more science out there. I bet we will hear about this in the Green News Report coming up from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. There's more real science out there about the fact that, well, you know, the climate change is undeniable, and the fact that humans cause it is equally undeniable. And then there's this photograph out there. You remember a couple of Fridays back I was telling you about this little political creature, this cipher named Cart Goodwin, who accepted Joe Manchin's appointment to warm the Senate seat for him until Joe could get around to getting elected, because even appointing himself was too sleazy for Joe, which is really sleazy. When you got to see this photo, you have got to see this photo. And it was posted over on the show post for this evening at headonradionetwork.com. It really was, but it's not there anymore. What this is it's a photograph that Ken Ward has used with one of his coal tattoo posts. And I, of course, immediately grabbed it, because you'll have to go to the site to see it, because he sent me a note saying, "You can't, that's an Associated Press photo. You can't repost that on your blog." Of course, you know, fair use doctrine. Sure I can, but just to keep Ken happy. I sent a note off having the photo pulled to News Ninja Susan. But at any rate, you got to see this photo of Cart Goodwin. Just a teaser. Senator Rockefeller, where is your other hand? Let me ask that. So that's all part and parcel of what is on the way. Your phone calls, of course. Let's see. Got more than a couple of lines available. And you are welcome to make use of them. We've also got the Green News Report coming up from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. All of that on the way. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You're listening to the horn. Sing it, Frank.
Got the world on a string, sitting on a rainbow. Got the string around my finger. What a world, what a life, I'm in love. I got a song that I sing, I can make the rain go. Anytime I move my finger, lucky me, can't you see I'm in love? Life is a beautiful thing, as long as I hold the string. I'd be a silly so-and-so if I should ever let it go. I got the world on a string, sitting on a rainbow. Got the string around my finger. What a world, what a life, I'm in love. Life Life is a beautiful thing, as long as I hold the string. I'd be a silly so-and-so if I should ever let it go. I got the world on a string, sitting on a rainbow. Got the string around my finger. What a world.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Thursday, July 29, 2010.
Another oil spill, now in Michigan. Record heat in Moscow, fires in California. Competition sparks the electric car market. Plus, where has all the oil gone?
Long time leaking. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Still going to take years to remove the millions of gallons of oil from the Gulf, although cleaning crews are seeing mysterious results.
One thing we did not see, though, were the huge patches of black oil that sort of has become the face of this disaster out there.
My God, you realize what this means?
Someone has stolen our oil!
The mystery continues on this, your Green News Report. The Green News Report is sponsored by you, our listeners. Yes, you. Please stop by BradBlog.com today, hit the PayPal button, and send your vote for the Green News Report to continue. Okay, Desi Doyen, good news. Our friends at ExxonMobil have announced that their earnings have nearly doubled this quarter. So the most profitable corporation in the history of civilization is now more profitable. That's great news for them. And I'm delighted that the U.S. is still giving these companies billions and billions of subsidies. Boy, do they need it, unlike those people who are unemployed and out of work. But never mind that. What do you have for us today?
Well, a record month-long heat wave in Moscow has led to the highest temperatures ever recorded in the Russian capital since record-keeping began 130 years ago, soaring up to 37 degrees. That's Celsius, of course. That's just under 100 degrees Fahrenheit, but still overwhelming a nation unequipped to deal with heat, which, along with record forest fires in the region, have created a heavy blanket of smog at 10 times safe levels in the city. Officials are urging residents to skip work and stay indoors.
You know, these stories are remarkable. We hear this day after day, week after week, record temperatures everywhere, and yet here in our country, we couldn't even pass climate legislation in the Senate, no matter what the scientists were telling us, no matter what the weatherman keeps telling us. It's remarkable.
Over in Southern California, 25 homes have been destroyed in Tehachapi, California, from two wildfires that erupted and spread so quickly residents barely had time to escape. What sparked the fires is still unknown, but a break in high winds is giving fire crews some relief. The area is so windy, it's home to several wind farms. And in fact, it is such a windy area that this week was the groundbreaking ceremony for what is slated to be the nation's largest wind farm near the Mojave Desert.
Is this
the same fire that was threatening the Sequoia National Forest over
Yes,
weekend.
It's one of two.
Okay.
General Motors announced this week the pricing of its new electric car, the Volt, at $41,000 retail or $34,000 after a federal tax credit. But the Chevy Volt will still cost more than Nissan's all-electric Leaf at $26,000 after the federal tax credit. Now, some states offer additional incentives that will drive that price even lower, but that's not the only difference. The Volt is not a pure electric. It has a 340-mile range when using its small supplemental gas tank, which acts like a mini electric generator, whereas the Leaf is all electric with a 100-mile range. And they say that that's enough for the majority of trips that Americans take, and of course it means that the Leaf itself will generate zero emissions.
Okay, when can I get this electric car? That's all I want to know.
Starting in 2011-ish.
Okay. Then I just got to come up with $30,000 or $40,000, but we'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
Oil spills everywhere, it seems. In addition to our newest oil spill in the Gulf, the one that blew on Tuesday when a tugboat collided with the shallow water oil well that was brilliantly located in the middle of a Louisiana marsh.
With the gusher coming up, is that still gushing?
Yeah, they're still working on that
okay.
one. There's now a new oil spill in southern Michigan, estimated at over 1 million gallons so far, that has spread 16 miles down the Kalamazoo River and has now been declared a disaster area. Containment crews are working to prevent the spill from reaching Lake Michigan, only 50 miles away. It's a leak from a pipeline, one of over 200,000 miles of pipelines that crisscross the country. 100 spills reported every year. Wednesday was the 100-day mark of the BP oil disaster in the Gulf. The good news is that now that no more new oil is gushing into the ocean, NOAA scientists and the Coast Guard say visible signs of oil on the surface have dissipated more rapidly than expected. But the damage may already be done, says Louisiana Representative Charlie Melison in an interview with MSNBC.
The disappearance doesn't necessarily mean it's gone. Where has it settled out? Where has it gone to? And what we don't see is what is concerning the people of Louisiana and the Gulf Coast.
As well it should be. And you're already hearing these folks, these apologists for the fossil fuel industry saying, oh, see, it wasn't that bad after all. Everything's fine. Nothing to worry about here. I don't think that's the case, but we will find out, I suppose, in the days and months ahead.
And years ahead.
I was going to say, yeah, really, decades ahead as the fallout continues and we find out just exactly what we've lost down there in the Gulf. For more on that and the stories we didn't get to, please check out our website, greennews.bradblog.com. You can subscribe and have our podcast sent to your computer for free at iTunes. You can listen to us on your mobile device via Stitcher Radio. And, of course, follow us 24/7 on the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Electric car on road so dark to change the end, rewrite the start. Electric car, so good, so fun.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95? Save
at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Hour two begins. 16 minutes past the hour of 7 o'clock here on the East Coast. Well, I tell you what, I hate to keep people on hold, so more than anything else, we will go straight to the phones and go into more shenanigans later. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Brother Rob.
Hey, what's up, Cossack?
Not much. They've at least staunched the bleeding temporarily.
Gushers. Yeah, well, I'm sorry. I remain a bit of a skeptic and still waiting to see if they've got it stopped.
Oh, me too. I'm just, like I said, temporarily they've got it staunched. At least it's not spewing at the horrendous rate there was, hopefully.
Right. But the problem is, did you see, this was back before we headed to Vegas, Cossack, did you see that story from the Mobile television station where they went and they tested the sand and the water in, like, little sand castle pits where children were playing on the beach?
Oh, yeah.
That was horrifying, because they were all just, toxic. All that water was just sickeningly toxic. And then the sample they took out of the water right by a boom, that was the real punchline, because they got it into the lab to try to test it, and it exploded.
Huh.
So, that's the thing, and I'm very concerned with the, gnat-like attention span of the American people, and I'm afraid that it will. So much of that message on that phony baloney greenwash video, I agree with.
Yeah.
It is a national problem. The mountaintop removal is a national problem because this is our country. And one of the things that the right wing has done ever so well, Cossack, is to fragment this country. And to make us think regionally, or us versus them, or creating all these false levels, dichotomous levels. And it is all of our problems. And I'm scared to death that the American people say, well, it's not leaking anymore. I can go back to watching Desperate Housewives.
Well, yeah. It's, another point I wanted to bring up is, how we, at least a large part of how we got into this mess, goes to, Edward Bernays and the wonderful public relations industry.
Exactly.
Now, and let's be brutally honest about it. Public relations is, at its core, in its essence, propaganda. I want to sell you something.
Sure.
And I will say whatever I need here. Women smoking cigarettes became torches of freedom. Cigarettes were torches of freedom. Get those women smoking, something which was totally alien to the society at the time. The only women who smoked were those women. But a decent woman wouldn't be caught dead with a cigarette in her hand at the time.
Right.
And yet, within less than 20 years, that it turned around almost completely.
And the heart disease, and right.
Yeah. And I don't know. As I have said before, we have to realize that our entire mindset, our entire way of thinking, our entire point of view has to change. We have to get away from this idea of American exceptionalism. God's our next door neighbor. Come on, people, for God's sakes.
Yeah, because what it is, exceptionalism is, I was reading something earlier today, and what a geek I am. Do you know that the Romans, especially the senatorial patrician classes, they talked about Roman exceptionalism?
Oh, certainly. But that's part of that imperial blindness. We're the empire. We must be the best. No one else knows anything. We know everything. We are the empire. But the problem of it is, people tend to forget they were emperors in their time, too. Turnaround point almost anywhere. France was an empire. Britain was an empire. Russia was an empire. Germany was an empire. China was an empire. Come on, they've all been there. They've all done that. And guess what? Some of them have learned.
Didn't work. Well, empire never works out.
Not real well.
No, I mean, empire is the natural end cycle of any attempt by any government to engage in unrestrained growth.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, that's the mortal flaw behind capitalism. You cannot, you know, there is no such thing as unlimited growth in a finite society, in an ecosphere with finite limits, which we are. You know, how in Christ's name can we justify having 5% of the world's population, 25% of the entire world's incarcerated, and we devour over 25% of the world's combined resources?
That it's that they're we cannot say that too often.
Do you think that the rest of the world is going to keep on looking on benignly?
Sooner or later, I think the world's going to get pissed.
Yeah. What's the old saying? You know, be careful how you treat people on the way up, because you're going to meet them
on the way back down.
And we forget that. We treat friend and foe atrociously alike. And we're going to be very, very surprised one of these days when we find out that our real friends, people who really care at all whether we exist, are really few and far in between, and we certainly haven't helped the situation.
No. I mean, look at the stuff, some of the stuff that comes out of the WikiLeaks release. You know, what we know about Pakistan and what our government has known about Pakistan while they've been prettying up the story for the morons among us for years. Because I don't know if you perused much of the WikiLeaks business, Cossack, but there was nothing in there that came as a surprise to me. It's stuff that Malloy has been talking about, that Hartman's been talking about, I've been talking about, the left liberal blogosphere has been talking about for flipping years. There was nothing new in it.
But look at the difference between how that leak was handled by the New York Times and how it was handled in Europe.
Oh, yeah. But remember, this is the New York Times. What did the New York Times do when we found out, which revelation was it that we found out that right before the election that the New York Times had been hanging on to for months? It was before the 2004 elections, and I can't remember. Oh, darn it! It all runs together after a while.
You're thinking about the story about the Bush wiretaps, and that was
yes.
That was supposed to be printed in late October, early November of 2004.
But they had it for months prior to that.
Well, no, I mean it was supposed to come out right. Literally at the time of just before the election. Can you imagine what that would have done to the election? You know, it wouldn't have even been a question. And you remember what Chimp Boy said shortly after that second election.
That he had political capital and he was going to spend it?
Even worse. We had our accountability moment, 2004 elections. I mean, up until that point, the rest of the world could have at least somewhat forgiven us.
Yeah, because the first one was stolen.
Yeah,
and there's every reason to believe that the second one was stolen outright as well. The only difference being a matter of climate between Florida and Ohio.
True. Well, that and the fact that one of the programmers that was
yeah, him dead now.
Yeah.
Stay off small aircraft.
He was a very good pilot. I believe it was the only crash he had.
most very good pilots only have zero. Hey, Cossack, good to hear from you, brother.
It was good to hear from you. I'm sorry you got jerked around, lost wages.
You know what? I'm still sorting out. I don't know how much of it was Las Vegas and how much of it was, well, feh. And I even got an email earlier today asking me to give my thoughts on how it went. I really don't think they want that.
Well, yeah, you should write something up at least for the horn pages.
Well, you know, it's funny. Bart Kopp asked me if I'd like to write a trip report, and I before I went, I said, "Yeah, I'll be happy to. I think that'd be a lot of fun." And then afterward, I don't think there's anything Bart would want to print. Bless his heart, his trip reports are a scream.
Right.
You know, with photographs with circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one, I couldn't even begin to hold a candle to that stuff. He's a past master at it, but you know, all I can say is, "Hey, I looked over at the poker room, Bart, and I realized that I couldn't play." You know, it was like being 5 years old again, and nobody just, you know, because you know maybe I could have sat down if I, you know, if it was, you know, pissant stakes. But God, you know, shoot, I couldn't afford the cab ride to go over, so I could go and see what Fatburger was all about. So, you know, it is what it is. But, you know, the kids had a good time. We worked like dogs. Then there was some time wasted on stupid crap. But you know what? We got to relax a little bit somewhere that we'd never been before. I'm now happily back, ensconced back in my own little humid world. And it's
right.
Yeah, but it's still heat. I gotta admit, it felt pretty good. It was funny though. The last couple of days that we were there, there were actually clouds in the sky, and it was different. I actually had sweat bead up on my forehead. Of course, it was gone in about 15 seconds.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but no, my, it would be fun to win the lottery and not have to worry about money and go out there and see how you really live it. Because I did walk, and you know, this is the part that stings. I walked Agnes past, when we were getting herded through those overpasses and stuff, we walked past places like, you know, Armani, Chanel, Louis Vuitton, Gucci, all of that stuff. And it's when you see that longing look in your wife's eye,
uh-huh,
that you really feel like, wow, I'm a failure. Because you want to just go in and go, whatever you want, honey, you know, naked with a checkbook, go to it.
Every woman's fondest dream.
Yep, turn loose in Neiman Marcus, naked, or Saks Fifth Avenue, naked with a checkbook. Or in this day and age, naked with an American Express Platinum card.
Correct.
Naked with a checkbook sounds funnier, though. Cossack, have a good evening, my friend.
All right, you too, Bob.
Bye now.
Take care.
The Cossack calling from North Florida. And onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Hey, Sandra.
Hey, listen, what do you think about this story of this man who, I don't mean to laugh, he posed as Israeli and had sex with this Israeli woman, supposedly, and he's gone to jail because the court says he couldn't lie and he was really a Palestinian. And do you hear about that story?
I'm looking for it now because I don't know how I missed it.
No, okay. Well, basically, it's something out of, it's like the, like, South, it's just so bizarre. This man is being sent to prison because...
Oh, my God! Yeah. Arab man convicted of rape after posing as Jew to seduce woman.
Right, so, I mean, I thought that story was just it just fits so well with their sort of apartheid.
Yeah, doesn't this just smack a little too much of racial purity?
Well, that's what I'm saying, but it really fits in. I just thought, wow, this is like, okay, well, the woman agreed to have the sex, but then when she found out it was a Negro, she screamed rape. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, let's bring the rest of the Horn family in on the fun here.
Yeah.
Headline. Israel, Arab man convicted of rape after posing as Jew to seduce woman. In a ruling that could strike fear in the hearts of cads everywhere, a Jerusalem court has ruled that lying to a woman to get her into bed is a form of rape. Sabar Kashur, 30, an Arab resident of Jerusalem, pretended to be a Jewish bachelor looking for a relationship. He met a Jewish woman, and they went to a nearby building to have consensual sex. According to the account in the Haaretz newspaper, he split before she'd finished putting her clothes back on. She filed a criminal complaint for rape and indecent assault, which authorities took seriously. Sure, it wasn't classic rape by force, reasoned Jerusalem District Court Judge Sivi Siegel, but if the woman hadn't thought the accused was a Jewish bachelor, she would not have cooperated. The court, but there's a punchline. The court rejected a plea bargain to serve community service and sentenced Kashur to 18 months in prison.
Right, where are the white women at? You understand what I'm saying?
Oh, my God.
I mean, it's just sort of, I saw that story, I thought, I don't want to make light of it, but first of all, dude had to get some. He went like that. That's crazy.
Well,
right?
Aren't there, Sandra, some physiological issues at work here?
Oh God.
I mean, isn't there a sort of a dead giveaway when a guy is naked as to whether he's Jewish or not?
Well,
I don't want to get all gross at dinner time or anything,
no,
but
hello to the, that's what I'm saying. That's what I mean about, it was a Negro, because that woman, come on, she, what in the world?
Yeah, Sammy Davis.
Oh my God. So anyway, but that story.
That was awful. I can't get out of my Vegas mindset, sorry.
I don't know. I just saw that and I thought, oh wow. It kind of blew my mind.
You are not racially pure, and you are going to school. You are going to school for 18 years, 18 months.
Yeah, no, it's a really nasty story.
That's really vile, and it reminds me of a terrible joke. Do you mind if I share it?
No, feel free.
The guy's standing out on the highway, thumbing for a ride. Car pulls over. He gets in. A nun's driving. And they're going down the road and making idle chit-chat, and the nun, and they start talking about sex, because it's a nun, And the guy finally says, I got to tell you this, sister. I've always wanted to have sex with a nun. And the nun says, I can't do that, but would oral sex be okay? And he says, well, sure. I mean, I'm a bachelor, and, this is just, I'm a good Catholic. And so they pull over in a blind alley, and the nun does and they get going again. And the nun goes to drop the guy off, and he goes, sister, I have a confession to make. He says, I'm not really a bachelor, and I'm not really Catholic, and I've got a wife and two kids in Hoboken. And the nun looks at me and says, that's okay, my name's Louie, and I'm on the way to a costume party.
Oh, God, that's a good one.
This is that.
But the whole idea of it is so bizarre that they could make a case, because, what if some dude tells you that, I'm really rich, and you have sex with him, and you find out he's not rich, is that rape?
Open question. This is what happens when you get issues of race and issues of religion, all these artificial barriers to human interaction. This is what happens when you let it invade your judicial system. And the next time I hear some miserable right winger talking about the radical system of justice they got there in them Arab Muslim countries, I got this one to point at.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying it's just sort of, if you're saying that lying, you're misrepresenting yourself, well, that can take the form of hundreds of things.
Oh, baby, I love you,
Right, so can you do that person for rape? And the only reason why this man is going to prison is because he's Palestinian.
I mean, what was the testimony like, Sandra? I said, yes, I consented to have sex with him, but then he told me he was a filthy Arab and my consent was no good.
Well, I know, and that's why it just smacks of so much of the racial business, because she's like now all remorseful and horrified that she did it with one of them. So she has to, scream rape and send the man away.
Well, remember, there is a religious right element in Jerusalem now that is well on the way to making Iran and Saudi Arabia look liberal.
Well, they don't even know what a Jew is anymore, right? Isn't that the latest?
Well, there's segregated buses, you know, and the filthy women can't ride with the good, clean men. And
oh,
yeah.
Yeah, no. Of course, I'm sorry to make light of it because, I mean, it's horrible for that man, you know, on some levels, but.
Well, that's what slays me here because the last story, the kicker to the story, you know, after they convict the guy on these dubious, highly spurious charges, then there's a deal. Well, okay, let him do community service. And the court, recognizing what it had done, still says, nah, you're going to prison for 18 months. We're going to treat you like a rapist. We're going to put you in there with people who abuse children and people who commit murders and beat their wife. Well, wait a minute. Wife beating may be legal in Israel, for all I know.
Probably if the stick is a certain...
Yeah, no broader than the circumference of the thumb or something.
Something mad like that. Yeah, well, no. Anyway, I just, the sort of form, the form that Israel is taking is really bizarre. That's all I got to say about that story. But I just thought that, you know, I was wondering if you had heard about it because it's just so over the top. But listen, did you hear about that Blankenship at the press club?
Oh yeah, that happened while I was gone. I saw a posting from The Washington Crime Reporter. That just makes the little hair stand up on the back of your head. But you know what? It's not just Blankenship. There's a story out today about Rand Paul, Sandra.
Oh no! Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
From TPM. There's an interview with Rand Paul coming out in next month's issue of Details, which is the magazine in Kentucky that sounds surprisingly like a gay newspaper. I mean, come on, it does, doesn't it? They did an interview with Rand Paul, and they asked him about mountaintop removal. And this is the pull quote from the article. Paul believes mountaintop removal just needs a little rebranding. I think they should name it something better, he says. The top ends up flatter, but we're not talking about Mount Everest. We're talking about these little knobby hills that are everywhere out here, and I've seen the reclaimed lands. One of them's 800 acres with a sports complex on it, elk roaming covered in grass. My God, can you imagine, you know, running a post pattern at a sports complex, you know, waiting for the ball to drop over your shoulder from the quarterback, and you got to leap an elk? They got 800 acres with a sports complex on it, elk roaming covered in grass. Most people would say the land is of enhanced value because now you can build on it. What a jackassed moron.
Oh, dear God. No, he is an idiot. It's really so true. I mean, what's the difference between him and that Alvin Green at this point, to be honest?
Not a heck of a lot. But no, you want to know the difference, Sandra? I'll tell you the difference because we had the story last night on the show.
Hmm.
He has got absolute dump truck fulls of 527 cash coming his way.
Well, speaking of Alvin Green, there's another crazy ass Negro running for office. Have you heard about this woman?
No.
Aisha Griffin?
No.
Okay, her slogan is not the white man's bitch. That is a slogan.
Really? That's on bumper stickers?
She's running out of Minneapolis, Wisconsin, I guess. Milwaukee. And the board is forcing her to drop that slogan. That's what she wanted to put on the ballot.
You?
Aisha Griffin, not the white man's bitch. I mean, they're coming out of the woodwork. And you should see a picture of Aisha. Nice.
Nice.
Yeah. Anyway, though, but
I'll go looking. This. Oh God.
Taking it to the state court, I guess. You know, First Amendment issue and all that, but I don't know. She needs to stop.
But isn't that the slogan for a whole bunch of America's politics, Sandra?
Well, you know, the slogan is kind of, I mean, but it's just like, oh, I don't know. It just sort of falls into just how everything is just really crazy. It's really crazy. So I heard that Sherrod is suing that guy.
I hope she, and you know what? There's a transference doctrine. And I hope she goes ahead and names, and I owe you for this one. I hope she goes ahead and names Radio Rwanda for it as well, in it as well. Because
Radio Rwanda needs to be called out for what the hell they are.
And they're sweating it a little bit now because they say that mistakes were made.
Yeah, mistakes were made. I mean, that's pretty much what Obama said today on The View. That fool was on The View. I was like,
did you catch this sort of opposite world, alternative universe explanation for Shirley Sherrod is proof that we're making strides on race? Did you catch this quote? Obama says, look, I think that we have made so much progress. I had a conversation with Shirley Sherrod, wonderful woman. She's the first one to acknowledge how much progress we've made. Think about her history and what she went through. Her father being murdered and her growing up in the Jim Crow South. Now she's on the phone talking to the President of the United States. And she'd been on the South Lawn for a celebration of federal employees just a couple of weeks earlier. And that's a testament to the progress that we've made. Well, she was only on the phone to the President of the United States because the President of the United States let his administration screw her on phony, trumped-up charges.
I don't even know what to say about that. That's bubble, man. Bubble. Come on. He could do better than that. He was blaming the media still.
Yeah, what I do think happened in that situation is that a 24/7 media cycle that's always looking for controversy and oftentimes doesn't get to the facts first generated by a phony controversy. Really? It's the media's fault? The media didn't fire Shirley Sherrod.
Well, the Mel Gibson apologist was, you know, kissing his ass appropriately. You know who I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Whoopi is a fucking apologist for Mel Gibson. It's like, girl, get some eyebrows. Anyway.
But I just, But then again, there's that element of damned if he does and damned if he doesn't.
I mean, the rest of it, because I watched some of it, I thought the rest of it was quite amusing.
He did a smackdown on Elizabeth Hasselbeck.
Right, oh yeah, she was trying. I said to myself, don't say nothing, dumbass, and she did, and she looked stupid.
Better to be silent and thought a fool than to open your mouth and prove it, Elizabeth.
She's looking there uncomfortable, twitching. I'm like, oh, I know you want to jump in there, bitch, shut up. And then when she did say something, it was crazy. And she got shot down. He just sort of ignored. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Pathetic. But the thing that was killing me was, he's quite personable, of course. Obama is killing me. But I was laughing when he was talking about, I know she went to jail. Talking about Lindsay Lohan, right?
Yeah.
Because they kept saying, oh, he didn't know. He said, oh, no, I know she went to jail. I don't know. I just thought that was quite...
Well, that was his moment. That was like George Bush with the barcode scanner. He had to prove that he's following the Lindsay Lohan gossip.
Yeah. Well, at any rate, you know, people. I guess there's a lot of people criticizing for going on The View. Is that the latest? I mean, so what?
As a matter of fact, Radio Rwanda has made a big deal out of it.
Oh no! See, I shouldn't even be calling it Radio Rwanda because I never watched it, Bob. I can't tell you the last time I watched Fox. I don't.
President Obama didn't have time to go and meet with the Boy Scouts of America, but he did have time to go on The View.
Oh.
Now you think I'm making that up?
I believe you. I just in the meanwhile though.
Why does Barack Obama hate the white people in the Boy Scouts?
Oh, of course. And in the meantime, though, the Republicans are, you know, are blocking the small business bill. I mean, look what people do.
Oh, it's not, but it's not just that. Have you seen this? Are you familiar with this? The James Zadroga 9/11 Health and Compensation Act of 2009.
Oh yeah, they don't give a F about them people's health.
No. This is something that would provide medical monitoring to those exposed to toxins at ground zero, bolster treatment at specialized centers for those affected by toxins from September 11th, and reopen a compensation fund to provide for the economic loss of victims. And you know what it's being called by the Republican Party?
An entitlement program?
You win. Toaster for Sandra.
Hey, ding, 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 ding. Listen, that's so predictable, you know?
I love the quote from the Repig-Lickin' press release. Republicans continue to believe that those who responded to the attack should get the treatment and liability protection they need because they dutifully answered a call for help. But the bill creates a massive new entitlement program, exposes taxpayers to increased litigation, and is paid for with tax increases and potential job losses. Potential job losses. Not real ones, just, you know, sort of imagine. You know, because they can't just come out and say imaginary job losses, Sandra.
Oh, God. No. It's just incredible because, you know, I'm just sort of flashing back to all them people who just showed up, not even a question, you know what I mean? No concern, just there trying to help folks. And then I remember that bitch who said, oh, no problem, the air's all clean, keep working.
Oh, yeah, what's her name?
Christine, whatever. Or
yeah.
Todd, I don't know, Whitman?
Yeah, Christine, I think, yeah.
And it's just sort of like, and now we're 10 years down the road, and apparently some of these people, you know, their lungs are, you know, never going to be right. They're screwed, right?
It is a tragedy of monstrous proportions.
And this is what they're getting.
And remember, wasn't Condi Rice involved in that a little bit too? Not just the EPA flack. Wasn't she the one of the ones that had a hand in saying, oh, it's safe, just go right back in?
I guess, yeah, because, you know, they wanted to have the facade so they can get everything back going. Wasn't that the idea of it?
Right. They had to prove that it was safe for Dim Leader to go in there and get his bullhorn out and say, we're going to find him dead or alive.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's just, you know, it's criminal what went on. And the criminality continues with them denying just basic life-sustaining care. It's incredible. I mean, speaking of Condoleezza, there she was with Aretha Franklin. I was like, what?
Stop. Where? When?
But they were doing some sort of charity benefit, and Aretha invited her on the stage. She played the piano to I Say a Little Prayer. It was just like, hello? So it was just bizarre.
Oh, that's...
I saw the video and I was dying because it was like Condoleezza. I wish you could see me because she was like playing, kind of twitching, trying to get a bit of rhythm. And it's just like, come on. But no, anyway.
No, yeah, she had that foot going about 3 beats off tempo.
Well, no, but you know, she's a musician, but she just looked kind of, it's just a...
Yeah, but she's like a concert classical pianist, you know.
Like, it was funny, though. Yeah, it was good. But anyway.
I'm still waiting for somebody who can do a good Nat King Cole to write the parody lyric, Condoleezza, you know, to the tune of Mona Lisa.
All right.
Condoleezza, Condoleezza.
Well, Sandra the Entertainer did something with her, which I thought was funny. You remember that?
Yeah.
But, oh, my God, I forgot you were talking about. You mentioned Condoleezza.
Well, no, just that she had a hand in the whole 9/11 thing, because the central tenet of this legislation is that it would reopen the compensation fund through the year 2031.
Okay.
And Republicans just don't like that.
Well, yeah, no, it's not a tax cut, so they don't want to have anything to do with it.
Oh, no, they're saying that it's a tax increase, because here's the way this thing gets funded is that it closes a tax loophole on foreign companies with U.S. subsidiaries.
Mm. Oh, no. And I mean, that is...
And that's a tax increase.
Well, that is such a needed move anyway. And it's pathetic that the Democrats felt they had to bring up 9/11 victims, and it still didn't work, you know? They should be able to pass that kind of loophole closing bit of legislation without anything.
Well, that's the absolute truth, and the problem is, you know, the Republicans just snap a salute and say 9/11, and America washes itself in a fresh round of tears. Democrats try to do something substantive, and suddenly the Republicans are hollering, more tax cuts.
Well, now, don't you think it's interesting, speaking of the Republicans, don't you think it's interesting that the Democrats, they will never even consider any kind of investigation of the Bush years, nothing. Look forward, look forward, look forward. And Crazy Bitch comes out before they even retake anything, saying it's going to be subpoenas 24/7. And Michelle Bachmann, if they get in the power, it's going to be subpoenas all the time.
Did you catch a little bit of pushback between Michelle and Eric Cantor?
Oh no, Bill, they don't. Why? They don't want. They don't really want the Tea Party nearby. Is that what?
Yeah, yeah. The Cantor refused to join the Tea Party caucus of the Republicans in the House and said the Tea Party needs to stay out of Washington.
Well, they don't want to deal. You know, that's just they're just sort of losers. Like, you know how the Christian.
Right. Well, you know, who wants the preacher in the brothel who isn't already there? I mean.
The Republicans are real upfront about if they get power, they use it to hit their opponents over the head.
Yeah, it's going to be a cudgel.
They're announcing it beforehand, yet and still, we still have to hear look forward from, shall I say, our side. And it's so frustrating. I'm so sick to death. It's like they're telling you what they're going to do to you, Obama. It's going to be Clinton Redux. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and he's still playing nicey with them.
Oh, it's horrible. But I tell you what, I'll let you go. But there's this the one thing I'm really getting sick of with Obama is the education. He had this little speech where he was...
Oh, I saw that too. That was really off-putting.
No, it's off-putting because, once again, it's like, how dare you talk about accountability for anybody? You always attack the teachers. Where's the accountability for all this corporate criminality that's rampant? You know what I mean?
But again, it's like what we've said for so long, Sandra. Capitalism when we're making money, and socialism when they're losing it.
I'm so sick of the attack on teachers too, because there's no way that the problem with the American education system is down to who's on the front line. It's easy to attack teachers. I think it's just a way of destroying sort of the last powerful union in this country.
Well, it certainly is. And of course, he went to the National Urban League to make this speech. But what I found sort of sandpapery for my hide was this business that he's framing education as an economic issue. And to be fair, Sandra, I agree that there's an economic component of so-called competitiveness. But what happened to, you know, is it impossible to talk about knowledge for knowledge's sake?
Is it
impossible to talk about quality education simply because an America that is educated is a better America? Do we have to find some way to hang a dollar sign on it? And that just rubs me the wrong way.
Well, no, that's the whole problem with him and Arne Duncan. It's all this sort of corporatizing of the educational system, too, where the end product is just whatever enhances the business community. And it's just like, hello? You know, what about, you know, playing the trombone or doing some art? You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, and that's right, because, you know, he says it's an economic issue when the unemployment rate for folks who've never gone to college is almost double what it is for those who have. It's an economic issue when 8 in 10 new jobs will require workforce training. So is that the measure now of what education is worthwhile? Whether you can make a buck at it in the new post-industrial economy? You know, because if that's the case, trombone playing and picture painting is out.
Well, no, but it's also just it's just so much BS, because as we've discussed with that Grove article I sent to you, the guy from Intel,
yeah,
talking about the jobs. That whole knowledge-based bullshit is a bill of goods they sold us to get everybody on board on this free trade shit, right?
Right.
But you can't have an advanced economy that's just, quote, knowledge-based. You start looking like, you know, Bangladesh, where every other person has a graduate degree. But what are they doing?
Exactly.
Well, you know, so it's just so much... I don't know, probably just to get the money to McGraw-Hill or Kaplan's or whoever makes these tests. I swear.
And just give up and teach the test.
I hate to keep reducing things to that, the corporate motto, because it's almost...
But that's what they're doing, Sandra.
But it just seems, you know, listen to him go on about the teachers and, you know, the poor schools. I mean, they're... know better than the bad, quote, bad public schools, you know?
Exactly.
Look
exactly.
at New York. New York, you know, all the test scores are lower than they were 3 years ago.
Well, you know, I've even out here in the wilds of rural America, I think I've told this story in the past, Sandra, but it bears repeating. I can remember when my daughters would vomit before getting on the bus when they were going to take the standardized test that week because they had been made such just emotional, nervous wrecks about it. I remember the principal of the elementary school telling the children that, well, you love me, don't you? You love having me for principal. Well, you have to do good on the test or they'll fire me.
Oh, yeah. Wow. I'm scared of that.
That's emotional abuse. Made me madder than hell.
Yeah, no, I think that, I wasn't too happy with that little song and dance he did about the education reforms. Ugh.
It doesn't smell like much reform to me. It smells like an expansion of testing.
Anyway, hey, listen, so it's not that much for a countdown before football season again.
No, it's not, and I tell you what, we've got LSU on the Mountaineer schedule, and we're traveling down to Baton Rouge, and I would love to be there for that beatdown.
Oh,
because I think the Jerry Van Dyke character on Coach, Coach Luther.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think Coach Luther up in Morgantown is going to have a really ugly trip to Baton Rouge.
Well, you better stay away from that codeine cough syrup they like down there. That's all I got to tell you. But
yeah, and you know what? We got to keep Bob Huggins at home. I thought I was the only hillbilly out in West Virginia, but it turns out he'd gone out there to watch an AAU tournament and fell down in his hotel room. Fell down in the hotel room and broke four ribs.
Yeah, no, I vaguely heard about that. Some athlete fell down and... you know, down some stairs and, you know, just the weird injuries.
Yeah, and that kind of stuff can happen in Vegas, and it don't stay in Vegas.
Oh, no. Well, anyway, I mean, I just, you know, the T.O. is back on another team. Him and Ocho Cinco, that should be hella entertaining.
No, that's not football. That's a reality show.
And what is that? What is that football show they do every summer? They're focusing on the Jets this year.
No, oh, I know what you're talking about.
And I think it's on HBO. I mean, I don't know. I don't have HBO, so I won't be able to watch it. But I mean, I have to say, I think the coach for the Jets is hilarious.
Oh, he's again. He's his own reality show.
Yeah. So.
But maybe that's the marketing model for the NFL now.
Whatever. With the NFL, you know, it's kind of hideous what happens to their players afterwards. But it's a damn well-run business, I got to say.
Well, did you notice that they have actually come out and made their strongest statement to date about head injuries?
Yeah, which is good because it's bad. It's really bad what it's doing. So,
everybody doesn't get to be Chris Collinsworth.
Oh, that's true. Yes, he seems to be able to handle himself. Well, he's pretty clever, that one. Yeah, he hasn't. He obviously protected his head.
Yeah, exactly. But you know what? And that's the funny thing. I remember when you and I talked about the what's that test they give at the combines? And the linemen routinely score higher than the so-called skill position players. And yet they're the ones that end up the most brutally injured.
Interesting. I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, is that freak from the Steelers, did he get suspended for how many games?
Oh, I don't know. The thing is, he's still there.
Yeah, no, they're not going to get rid of him, but still slimy. And did they release, not them, but Michael Vick? That fool, he must be gone by now, right?
Oh, I gotta tell you. Did you see the Ted Haggard quote?
Oh, God, no. What was it?
He's been discussing his little snorting meth off the penis of a gay man moment problem, and he has now told the Wall Street Journal that he... Let's see. He's not gay. He's still not gay. It was a massage gone wrong. And he said he over-repented.
Wait, back up. A massage?
It was a massage gone wrong.
Gone right.
It's like Bart Kopp said, you know, he's just laying there getting a massage and that man's penis just fell right in his mouth.
It went right, you fool.
But you said Michael Vick, and that's where, no, you're not going to be well after this, Sandra. You are not going to be well. This is the poll quote. In discussing his return to the pulpit, he said, and I'm not making this up, and this is a quote, Tiger Woods needs to golf. Michael Vick needs to be playing football. Ted Haggard needs to be leading a church.
Shut up.
What? I knew you wouldn't be all right.
Oh, my God. You know, that's almost as bad. That's great. And the sports thing, you know, of course, it's hilarious because my other story is the Rick Pitino thing.
Ain't it beautiful?
He said he spent 15 seconds on my poor lady. That was the length of the sexual encounter.
Don't say length in conjunction with this story.
And I was rolling, I said, 15 seconds? What? What the hell?
That's not even as long as it takes to say, are we done yet?
Oh, my God. And I was dying. I'm thinking, oh, dude. Anyway, so, yeah, the Rick Pitino thing, I'm following. I swear I'm about to go on tweet. See what's going on there.
Just to keep up. Well, just remember, Tiger Woods needs to golf. Michael Vick needs to be playing football, and Ted Haggard needs to be leading a church.
Oh, that's, you know, I mean, the guy is queer just on the strength of that comment right there. Come on. That's fantastic.
You know, those are two people that you don't need to be, I mean, that, well, you know, who am I?
How are you going to roll yourself up in all them with those two?
I don't know where that comes from.
You know, I can figure out where it might come from, back to that massage that went right.
That went right.
Anyway,
I'm so ashamed of us.
Who cares? It's like, at this point, because I'm so through with the politics sometimes, it's doing my head in, but this other sports is, hey, shit, it's great. Especially when you got stories like the Rick Pitino. Listen, is that dude
going to
bounce back or what?
You know, it's hard to say, but it's going to be with you wait for the other shoe to drop.
I swear. I mean, you know, winning cures all, as they say, but at the moment, that's funny. And another thing I'll end with is that goddamn Tim Tebow is holding out, yo.
And yet he is the number one selling merchandise jersey in the NFL.
Of course it is, but he's holding out, Bob.
Maybe he wants them to pray with him.
And if that jackass, the coach, he is looking like a complete jackass with this fool holding out.
I saw that the other day. From what?
Yeah, exactly. You know.
You know. Just, don't. You know. It does, sign me, or I won't warm the bench for you. I mean, they weren't thinking about playing him, were they?
I have no idea. It's just, you know.
You hold out if you're a guy who's going to get out there and make a difference on the team.
Exactly. You got to bench warm. How are you holding out when you're bench warming?
You know, I want to sit beside another I want an extra jug of Gatorade to sit beside.
No, it's incredible. And also, I don't know, I saw a Sports Illustrated or something. They were doing the top 20 most hated teams ever. And do you know that the Miami Heat is on the list? And they haven't even played a game together yet.
That's beautiful.
That's great. Yeah, no, it's fantastic.
I can't wait. I can't wait till they go to Cleveland.
Oh, no, it's high drama. Wherever them fools go, it's going to be, because they're already hated. It's fantastic. Anyway, listen, this conversation is really degenerating.
And that's when that's when we are both at our best, Sandra.
Okay, Bob, listen, take care.
Yeah, have a good night. Bye now.
Bye.
And that is Sandra. Jesus. We start out with a Palestinian dude going to prison for... Oh, my. Oh, my. And I still don't have a... well, I don't have a clear answer on whether Islam practices circumcision, but I think it does. So maybe there was no giveaway on that. I'm just ashamed. I'm so ashamed of myself. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Maura.
How are you?
I'm doing good. How about you?
Good. I called in because I am so angry about the Republicans blocking the 9/11 health bill.
It's disgusting, isn't it? I thought of you when I saw this story.
Your listeners don't know, but I got caught in all that dust cloud, and I worked downtown for many months. My health has been totally ruined by the air conditions down there. And these people are just heartless, absolutely heartless, not to take care of people that were very, very decent and did everything to help their fellow New Yorkers.
You know what?
I just don't understand them.
What drives me, well, the whole story drives me crazy, Maura, but it's this, you know, they're calling the closing of this tax loophole a tax increase, and it's not even, it doesn't even have regard to American companies. It's on foreign companies with American subsidiaries.
Absolutely.
And the Republican Party can't even stand up for American citizens in advance of foreign corporations. You know, how low can these rotten bastards go? Pardon me, but how low? And I'm ashamed to even ask because they'll show us.
Listen, as soon as you think they've reached bottom, they manage to find new depths.
And it's the absolute truth. And, you know, we're not talking about everybody gets a big check. We're talking about keeping the fund open until 2031. That's 30 years after the event. And making sure that everybody gets the medical monitoring that they need.
And you know, and it helps pay for the prescriptions for people. And I have a prescription plan which is pretty decent, but still my copays are equal to about $600 every 2 months.
Good God.
Yeah.
And that's stuff that, you know, that's stuff that happened to you. You were in good health before September 11th, 2001, correct?
I was.
And all of this lays at the feet of that disaster, and you know, the fact that the Republican Party can say this to the rest of America, after all of the hoorah and all of the flag waving and all of the little yellow magnet ribbon magnets on all of the cars, and they can say to the people who were right there in the smoking rubble, "Well, screw you," and they don't pay a political price for this, Maura?
Well, you know, there's no value to a photo op with a 9/11 victim anymore. So,
and. That's,
sorry to be so cynical, but...
No, well, I don't think it's cynicism. I think it's realism at this point, isn't it?
I think so. I really do.
You know, maybe, you know, I guess since Toby Keith isn't writing a song about it, but... They even went so far, Maura. I'm looking at the story. They called extending the program... And this is the quote, well beyond what is needed to take care of latent claims.
Oh, they have no idea.
Well, they have no idea and they have no soul. You know, either this is one of those situations where America stands together as one, or it is not. And they're the ones who said it is. But I guess that only extends to Halliburton and defense contractors and Blackwater and the Pentagon.
I mean, the government... They're the ones that caused a lot of the problems. I mean, granted, I was caught in the dust cloud. But that isn't what did me in. What did me in was working down there for months afterwards with all the toxic fires going on down there and breathing it in. Bob, you could taste the air. It was so bad.
Ugh.
It was horrible.
And in the meantime, Christy Todd Whitman was saying, you know, it's safe. Go back in.
You know, they have to get Wall Street up and running, so I have to get back to work. You know, Christy Todd Whitman should be shot.
How long, if you don't mind me asking a personal question, how long did it take before you developed symptoms, Maura?
Oh, I was hospitalized the October afterwards. I had asthma as a child.
Okay.
So the doctors figured I was like the canary in the cage, in the mine, rather. That, you know, I was just one of the first ones to go down with it. But it happened in September 11th. By the end of October, I was in the hospital. And I've been in and out of the hospital usually at least once a year ever since.
And you are permanently injured, is that correct?
Well, absolutely. I have 23% of my lung function left. And that doesn't come back.
Does this legislation have real meaning for you? Does it affect your personal situation?
No, I don't believe it would.
So you're not even
I'm on Social Security disability.
So you're not even arguing from the standpoint of someone who would benefit from it. Your concern is purely a matter of concern for your fellow New Yorkers and people who were impacted by it.
Absolutely.
It
blows my mind to think of how heartless these people can be.
Well, how dare the Republican Party refer to something that is merely taking care of fellow Americans as an entitlement program? That somehow people who had their health ruined on that day are getting some because you know entitlement program, Maura, is Republican shorthand for welfare.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I find it hard to believe that there weren't Republicans that weren't injured too. Why the hell aren't they standing up and screaming?
You remember when John McCain was running for president and he had all those posters that said "Country First"? Those were misprints, Maura. The reason they're not standing up and screaming is because it's always with them "Party First."
Right, you are. Well, I just wanted to, you know, let off a little steam. I was.
I'm so glad you did. You don't call regularly, and I understand why. But I love hearing from you, and you're the expert on this case.
I apologize to the audience for my voice. I can't help it.
Don't apologize. Don't you dare apologize. Don't you dare.
Okay.
It's a joy to hear from you, and we love you as well. And you take care.
Okay. Bye bye.
Thank you, Maura. Bye. That's Maura calling from New Jersey. And that's a little reminder that these stories have reality behind them. When these rotten, snot-nosed, the privilege-laden repiglicans get up and talk about how we can't create a massive new entitlement program that's paid for with tax increases, by God, they're talking about real human beings. The pissy repiglicking right gets all upset about whether or not somebody says a dirty word on terrestrial broadcast. When in fact, this is far more obscene than anything any F-bomb that could be dropped. Any S-word that could ever be said. This is a million times more obscene what these filthy Republicans are doing. But then again, they're filthy Republicans. Why would we expect them to act any differently? Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Brother Bob.
Brother Albert.
Boy, oh boy. I'll tell you, Maura doesn't need to apologize for anything because her call rebooted my brain after hearing massage gone wrong. That blanks me out. That completely blanks my brain, especially with everything else.
Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah.
Mountaintop removal, not so bad. It's pretty good.
You know, did you love that? It's not like we're talking about the Himalayas here. It's not like we're talking about Mount Everest. These are just these knobby little hills.
What a moron. Unbelievable. It's just, Social Security is an entitlement. And, you know, one part you left out, you know, yeah, the entitlement is, you know, welfare. But let's not forget what welfare is their code word for. You know, brown people.
Right, right.
Black people, yellow people, you know, the dirty races.
Well, let me put a question to you, Albert.
Mm.
If we could guarantee, and this is strictly hypothetical, but if we could guarantee to the Republican Party that only white people who were injured by all the toxic filth at Ground Zero would collect benefits. Do you think they'd get behind it? Because I think they would.
Yeah, slightly. Yeah, no doubt. I mean, you know, all I have in my head, it just every day, this is why I don't call all the time, because it's like, it's so outrageous now that every word in my mind is a four-letter word. These people are bringing up the misanthrope in me like you wouldn't believe.
It feels like you've got terminal Tourette's, doesn't it?
Oh, my God, and it just doesn't stop. And every day, it's even crazier. I was outraged last week when it came down to that doofus from Wall Street over here talking about how we have to, you know, cut Social Security. Oh, I got to cut it. Put it on Wall Street, yeah. You know, and thank God for Dennis Kucinich, who says, you know, of course, you know, I just want to know who you're working for, kind of thing, you know, because he's a brilliant man, and, you know, we're happy to have him. Speaking of the house for the smaller house, by the way, Rangel needs to go away. He needs to.
Yeah, it's getting a little embarrassing, isn't it?
It is embarrassing, and the whole thing is when we have these opportunities to take a high road, especially when it comes down to that, we got to do it. You know, we have to do it. And, you know, I don't know, I'm sure you know how I feel regarding the whole Sharon Angle Breitbart crap, and I hope she sues the shit off of him. I hope he is sitting there on his hands and knees until he's 80 years old and there's no Social Security and Wall Street sucked it up their nose, and that's what kind of life a scumbag like that needs. That guy is such, what the frick kind of guy gets a spoon like that in his mouth? Who puts that there? Are you kidding me? Why does this guy even have a... After the Acorn issue, she should sue him on behalf of Acorn. Acorn should sue his ass, too, because of all the things that...
Acorn should sue. Van Jones should sue. Shirley Sherrod should sue.
Yeah. Oh, and there's idiot right-wingers out in the world that I got the, you know, that I, well, I go out of my way to battle with every now and then. You know, these idiots, they'll say Van Jones like it's a dirty word. It's like, what are you, out of your mind? It's like, wind energy. Like it's a dirty word. You know, and I can give them, the hippie is a dirty word. Yeah, because everybody's been behind that guy with the matted dreadlocks and the B.O. that's crazy that the patchouli oil doesn't cover up because it's 20 years
old.
You
know, I knew patchouli was coming.
Yeah, well, I had to. But, you know... You give them that, but, you know, at the same time, it's like, well, organic, so what are you talking about? You know, like, well, it tastes better. Oh, look, it's healthier for you. You know, I mean, come on now. It's only so long you can use an insult before, you know, you're insulting yourself by using it. And that's what these people are doing. These people are just utterly ridiculous, just unbelievable. It never ends, and it never ends. I just can't, you know, now Lindsey Graham... And as I remember the whole white issue, here we go again. You know, this is what it is. Now they want to change the Constitution, so if you're born here, you're not a citizen. And I'm all for that, because, you know, all of a sudden now the Republicans are all about the Constitution's a living document and it can be changed, and, you know, because that's what you say when you say that, right? And isn't that the problem with liberals, as we think that the Constitution should be, you know, adaptable and we should be able to move it and, you know, always, encourage and, you know, fertilize human rights and, you know, further those agendas, you know, the progressive stuff, the evil progressive stuff, like the Tides Foundation that, you know, I've never even freaking heard of until, you know, I read an article regarding Glenn Beck, and then this guy goes and he puts freaking guns in his truck and he's going to go kill everyone there.
Yeah, lucky for us, he got loaded on the way with more than bullets.
Exactly. With that personal responsibility crowd, you know how it is, Bob. You know how it is. They can't do nothing right, these people. Nothing.
You know, they're personally responsible for obtaining their own liquor, and that's about as far as it goes. But no, you talked about the power Tourette's that's running through you. I was all nervous when I really was. I'm not blowing smoke. I was nervous as hell going into the segment with Amy Goodman on Democracy Now, and because I was sitting there, I had this little mantra going through my head: don't say asshole, don't say asshole, don't say asshole, because I knew she was going to ask me something about Don Blankenship or Joe Manchin. Uh-huh. Don't say asshole, don't say it. Because, you know, Bob, it's your big moment. This is history step. This is history calling, Bob.
Yeah.
And I'm going to pull a Johnny Fever and go sit there holding my coffee cup and say, booger. I had to work, Albert.
Oh, I couldn't do it, Bob. It would not happen.
You know, because that last thing I said was that, you know, about regulation and Don Blankenship, I said, you know, we ought to have an MSHA inspector there every time Don Blankenship sneezes, there should be an MSHA inspector there to hand him a Kleenex. And that was a physical trial. That was a chore, not to say every time he takes a, there ought to be an MSHA with the Charmin.
He is a degenerate, isn't he?
He is. Maybe that's, yes, he is a degenerate. Maybe that's the word we're looking for.
Yeah, he is a degenerate. You know, and you know he's supporting Rand Paul.
Oh, hell yeah. Those great, great, damn big, humongous dump trucks that they use on mountaintop removal jobs that have the tires that are two stories tall, they are filling those up with $100 bills, and they're going to dump it on Rand Paul's lawn.
That's fine. That's fine. You know, you really got to ask yourself. There are always those. I have my in-laws, and they're idiots. They're dumb, and they watch Fox News, and they're essentially a lost cause. You know, and that's where it gets into that whole marketing nonsense. You know, where you'll even have, you know, they're Democrats or so-called Democrats in the Tea Party. Why? Well, because in the deepest, darkest little nooks and crannies, the Tea Party has an issue or two that you can go, well, yeah, you know, I care about that, you know, da-da-da-da-da. They're not paying attention to the rest of the issues, and they're not paying attention to the whole, and, you know, they'll listen to that whole whitewashing of it. But, you know, at the bottom line, so you have this, you know, split in this group, right? So you can't call them all this or all that. But even though the Republicans are the only ones who go to their rallies and the only ones that go into their speeches and the only ones that, you know, ask money from them and all the other nonsense. And they're, you know, Fox News and Glenn Beck and all the Sean Hannity scum, they all created this nonsense out of FreedomWorks and everything else. You know, it's still at the point that I can say, oh, wait, there's 40% Democrats in there. All right, well, you know, let's say 20% of them is valid, and the other 20% are people that really do care about issues, because I've talked to a few of them. It's like one of those things, you know, you take the political compass test. You know, oh, you take the political compass test. Oh, guess what? Oh, you're a libertarian. You know, oh, look, you're a libertarian. Everyone's a libertarian. It's that. It's that nonsense. Oh, who else is a libertarian? Oh, that Ron Paul guy, Rand Paul. Oh, yeah, they're great. Oh, they want to take the Fed. Oh, you know, and there are those people that are very limp-wristed on this whole, you know, on the nitty-gritty of everything. You know, they don't realize, oh, Ron Paul doesn't believe in evolution. Interesting. He doesn't believe in what? Oh, Rand Paul thinks mountaintop removal is great, and all the Civil Rights Act wouldn't have been voted on. I mean, the guy's, he can't stand
he's
up to the test.
He's insane. And but you know what? I can guarantee you that listeners in Kentucky like Corey and Dennis and a number of other people will write me in a minute saying this guy has a chance of winning because they're and you know, this is something you and I have discussed in the past, Albert. There's a whole bunch of America that's that damn dumb.
Yeah. Yep. Terminally stupid. So with Lindsey Graham. And I'm behind him on this. He wants to change the Constitution, you know, amend the citizenship. Sure, if you're a conservative or a libertard or any of these other idiots, you can't be. You're not an American citizen.
No, I'll be a little fairer about it, Albert.
Oh, you're gonna be even fairer.
I'm gonna be even more fair. I want a test. And you know, I'm sure it'll piss off Tim James, the former Alabama gubernatorial candidate, but I want it offered in all kinds of different languages. But it's going to be a citizenship test. And it's not going to be easy. And we're not going to let Neil Bush sell it. And it's going to and you're actually going to have to know what's in the Constitution. And you're going to have to know actual history, like the fact that, you know, this country wasn't founded on Judeo-Christian principles. And it's not going to be like Texas, where as long as you say Jesus, it counts as correct. And what we're going to find out is that the vast majority of America that votes Republican will not have the vote anymore.
Yep.
Because they're too damn dumb to be a citizen.
Yep. Let's just go right to Starship Troopers. Yeah, right. It's some sort of crazy fascistic type of crazy system or what have you, and, you know, they have that. Where
service conveys citizenship.
Yes, exactly. Do it. Fine. At least that way, at least we make it another few hundred years. Going the route that these scumbag idiots want to go, we're not going to make it. We're not going to make it. We're just not going to frickin' make it. As a species, we're not going to make it. We got phytoplankton in the ocean declining 1% every year.
Yeah,
when
and
the ocean dies, we're done.
Well, I was tuned into NPR because it's the only thing close to real radio I can stand to listen over the airwaves. And there was a guy from the University of South Alabama being interviewed who had gone out into the Gulf and surveyed the sargasso population. Now, sargasso is a sort of a floating seaweed out in the middle of the ocean, and everybody knows about the Sargasso Sea, and, you know, you're really screwed when you get sucked up in it. But he said, underneath the sargasso, there's all this marine life that begins there. The little things eat the little bit bigger things eat the little things. The whole food chain starts on the sargasso.
Mm-hmm.
And he said the problem is when the sargasso dies, it's dead.
Yep.
Like 20, 30 years, and you've got a generation, you've got a multi-generational kill zone.
Mm-hmm.
And for all of the globe's roundness, everything flows downhill.
Yep.
And
Rapaquicans are like crayfish that live on the sargasso. And all they want to do is profit on the sargasso. And all they don't care about anything else except for their own crayfish. You know, they don't care about everything else that, you know, the sargasso needs this little tiny fish that and does this. And, you know, and all these other things. And they don't realize that they live in a...
Tuna.
In a cold
tuna. Little tiny tuna eggs hatch in the sargasso.
Mm.
Say goodbye to your chicken of the sea.
Yeah. They don't understand that we are codependent, everything about life. And the whole thing is the more we know about science, the more that screens it, that the universe is this big fractal, that everything in the micro level is at a macro level. So if we're going to sit here and look at what makes soil give us food, all these little tiny bugs and all this fungi and this and that, and everything acts in this whole big web. I think that's pretty awesome. I think if you want to look at God, you need to start looking under a microscope and start looking at the bigger picture of everything.
And yet we're talking about Rapaquicans, Albert. And, I mean, I mentioned this story earlier. Headline from the Financial Times, no less. Okay? We're not talking about Grist or Mother Jones or anything. This is the Financial Flippin' Times. Research says climate change undeniable. International sciences, there's a moment... there's a moment in this first paragraph that just made me launch and fly around the room naked for a couple of minutes. International scientists have injected fresh evidence into the debate over global warming, saying that climate change is undeniable and shows clear signs of human fingerprints. And here's the part that drove me crazy. In the first major piece of research since the ClimateGate controversy. Because I think if a responsible journalist had written that, it would have said, in the first major piece of research since the climate controversy, comma, which was a totally ginned-up right-wing piece of shit, period.
That's right. Exactly. Exactly.
But, you know, you and I and the Horn family, we read critically for content. John Q. Moran reads that in the Financial Times. Yeah, come on.
Liberal propaganda.
Yeah, the ClimateGate. Oh, ClimateGate. Yeah, that's where we learned that they're all liars. Except the fact that it was totally damn debunked.
It was. Yeah.
And it was. I mean, really, it was. We talk about Acorn and we talk about Van Jones and we talk about Shirley Sherrod. What about the damn hit piece that was done with ClimateGate? What about the fact that ClimateGate is in my vocabulary?
Yeah, exactly. 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 It's unbelievable. And, that's the thing that kind of pisses me off about our liberal media. You know, it's more like liberal media is our grassroots. And when I hear liberal media, what I think is our blogs and this and that and that. To me, that's our liberal media. You know, the Horn and everything else. When I hear liberal media, I don't even Huffington Post. I didn't see no ClimateGate victim, like headline, massive, updated, Drudge Report 3.0 or whatever the hell Huffington Post is. And, I'm not going to knock them all the time. There's too much low-hand nonsense. But where was this story? Why do I have to go to, the back panels of this blog or that blog in order to find what actually happened with the whole, you mean they were vindicated? That all that stuff was nonsense? And, like, three different universities in four countries, disappeared.
The whole freaking world?
Yeah, everyone looked, yeah, I mean, you know, it's It's unbelievable. It pisses me off to such an end.
Sparky, I just saw something he posted in the chat room, and he said, science is to Republicans as garlic is to vampires.
Oh, they're just retarded. Oh, my God.
Or as baseball bats are to zombies. I don't know.
Yeah, or chainsaws or grenade launchers, AK-47.
Stratocasters.
Yeah, I'm serious. We better start waking up. You talk about all these things. You know, we talk about energy, we talk about this, we talk about that. Like, now is the time. Now. Right now. I don't understand why we haven't had a works program putting in energy. And I don't know what he's waiting for, but President Not Sure needs to get off the freaking view and get on the ball when it comes to this energy issue. Because the energy issue will be, Bob, the extinction. It is already proving to be the extinction of the species, of life itself. And how dare us spray paint on that? I mean, it's like we're like little 10-year-olds that want to just make other people angry and then feed off that energy. And
Albert, this is poetry. Yeah, what you're doing is poetry. It absolutely is. Because, I guess that kind of works in tandem with what I said earlier about, that greenwash group, America's Wetland Foundation. You know, we want to work with BP to make sure that they understand that they need to pay for the, no, BP doesn't get to work with anything anymore. Once the well is capped, they need to go away and let the competent people fix it. Because they've already made enough of a mess of it as it was trying to fix it.
Yeah.
I mean, have we forgotten the top hat and the top kill and the crap hat and the golf balls?
Bob, those are only the sparklies. Let's not forget all the methane gas release and regarding, the whole the tax breaks these bastard sons of bitches are getting. They don't even, they're using prison frickin' labor to clean this up at 40 cents a day. Prison labor. This country and our priorities and everything else is
upside down.
Disgusting.
Totally upside down. Well, Albert, it has been far too long, and I hope it will not be longer. I hope it will not be as long in between conversations next time.
No, it actually can't, because I can't hold this shit in my head anymore. I can't just sit here and watch it and wait for the miracle, as Leonard Cohen sang.
No, got to do some cleansing.
Got to get it out so you get to hear it out. You know what I mean? All right, Brother Bob.
Take care, Brother Albert. Bye now.
Right, bye-bye.
Later. The Sage of Southwest Wisconsin, that is Brother Albert. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? Anybody home?
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, hi.
Reverbo?
Yeah.
Okay, just checking.
Ding, 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 ding. Boy, I'll tell you, this is following Sandra and following Albert. Damn, it's been quite an inspiring show you have tonight.
Well, thank you very kindly, sir.
I'm sorry. Well, first of all, I've been kind of screwed. Verizon, once again, is less than satisfactory as an Internet provider for me. I mean, I haven't even had the Internet for the last 4 days.
Oh, right. Can't keep it on, can they?
No, the heat wave. That seems to affect, like, all our nuclear launch codes and affects, like, residential, Internet providers. And I'm just...
Maybe that... Hey, you know what? The heat. Maybe that's why it didn't work at Netroots Nation.
I don't know. Well, I mean, if that's all it takes, then we're doomed. But anyway, I'm sorry to hear about you had a less than scintillating adventure in Vegas. That doesn't sound particularly...
It was highly frustrating, to say the least.
I didn't get...
I mean, the stuff we did in terms of raising awareness about mountaintop removal was great. But in terms of going out there and fostering this idea of being the new media, thanks for playing. Here's your lovely parting gift.
Well, maybe we can do something about that in the future, but I'm sorry about that. So I haven't really been that on top of the horn since you went out to did that remote in at the university
Concord, yes.
I heard some of that, and then I didn't hear any of this stuff in Vegas, but it sounds like it was a little, because they're less than super. But while you were, I'd written some things down while you were gone, and these are fun. And I don't know if you've run into any of this. Just a little some news blips here that, for example, Philip Morris Corporation. They're just all over the damn world. They just want to get people hooked on nicotine.
Wait, they're not Philip Morris anymore, though, are they?
I thought they were.
I thought they were Ad Synergy or something, Altruistica or Altria. Or
the cigarette people?
Yeah.
I looked them up, and they were Philip Morris.
Oh, okay, cool. Maybe it was somebody else. Maybe that was RJR Nabisco.
That could be.
But I digress you, and I don't mean to.
Oh, yes, sir. Just what do you think Philip Morris was up to in the last couple of weeks?
Passing out free cigarettes to little one-armed Afghan children?
Oh, you're so close. No, they were ratted out. They were busted using child labor in Kazakhstan to pick tobacco on farms they own. Yeah.
Going into your Marlboro Lights even as we speak.
Well, just trying to get all those Uzbeks and Kazakhstanis and the whole gang over there, you know. And,
Because you know what Kyrgyzstan needs? Kyrgyzstan doesn't need clean water. Kyrgyzstan needs another cigarette. Call for Philip Morris!
There you go. And evidently these kids were paid nothing, and they were forced to work, you know, 16 hours a day. And the fun thing is, really, this is how responsive that corporation like Philip Morris is. You know, now that they got busted, they just went ahead and announced they're going to address these practices.
They just found out about it themselves. That was a subcontractor doing all of that.
Well, they were real glad. Their position is now, we're happy we got ratted out. So now we can, you know, address these issues. All right, moving on. Let's see what's happening in the.
And they will, address them with all deliberate speed, by the way.
Yeah, they will. So anybody wondering, you know, whether or not these global corporations will, when no one's looking, will do the right thing? I think they're really. I know there's a cliche for them. They will be selling, you know, heaters in Miami Beach or something. This is ridiculous. I mean, in other news, we have, I don't know if you saw that story. I may have even sent it to you. It seems like the private sector has been busy hoarding money. They've been busy stockpiling.
Why, yes, as a matter of fact, they have.
Through recapitalizing all the money they've been getting from you and me and you know, of course, the productivity. You know, the stock market's still been doing fairly well. And so what have they been doing with all this money, which is up to, last time I checked, $1.8 trillion? These are big, big numbers. Nope, they're not adding staff. Nope, no plans to resupply personnel. Let's see, what else do they have no plans on doing with this money? Seems like no one's kind of getting hired, and they're just waiting around for those 2012 elections. About that.
Yeah, that would be, and don't forget those 2010 elections.
I mean, they're sitting on this is Iraqi and Afghanistan war sized money. This, when you get to 1.8 trillion, this is sending everybody to college for free in this country for 40 years.
Yes,
this is that kind of money. And so,
but we can't be edumacating everybody because then the Republican Party will cease to exist.
So let me see if we can develop this. So we can imagine here that big business and the Republican Party are kind of in collusion here to not hire anyone and keep things almost like at a critical stage here so that the American people will think the Democrats caused all this. Is that about right?
I think that's a yes.
Well, you can hire a lot of people with $1.8 trillion.
But you know what? We got a bad business climate here with that socialist Obama in the White House. And, well, we never know when he's just going to seize our assets, like when he put his boot on the neck of BP.
Yeah. how the heck did they manage to recapitalize themselves to the tune of $1.8
trillion? You know, didn't we do that?
Well, simply by not hiring anybody in this country. That's
and by giving them great big heaping wads of cash?
Oh, yeah, just funneling.
You know, one of the things I saw out there, Reverbo, is that Lottie from the chat room sent this along. There is a massive big money operation underway now, and to do what is being referred to as reform, healthcare reform. The insurance industry is spending boatloads of some of that recapitalization cash to make sure that the healthcare reform that, you know, really isn't what we needed in the first place, but was something, turns into less than nothing.
Oh, yeah, I know.
That's going to be great.
No doubt. There are a lot of billions of dollars spent on basically revoking that.
And you know what?
Yeah,
they're going to.
I don't know why. It seems like it fits their business model to a T. I don't know what they're bitching about. We just handed the insurance company 30 or 40 million new uninsured people. What is their problem with that?
So don't be surprised when, for-profit healthcare stocks shoot through the roof on Wall Street, and there are naked dancing insurance executives on tabletops all over the country.
Wow. Well, I can't wait till the...
Because they're doing it state by state by state by state.
Yeah. I can't wait till all this... You know, all the Democrats get thrown out and all the Republicans get back in there, and suddenly it's just like a hiring frenzy. You think?
Yeah, at a buck and a quarter an hour, because remember the Iowa State GOP platform calls for the total repeal of all mandatory minimum wage laws. On the other hand, however, there's another kind of mandatory minimum out there. And those are mandatory minimum sentences. I realize this is a bit of a leap from the topic, Reverbo, but you're going to love this.
Okay.
Yesterday, a little something passed the House of Representatives called the Fair Sentencing Act of 2010.
Really?
And the purpose of it was to close the disparity between sentences for white people who get caught with powder cocaine as compared to young black men who get caught with crack of an equal amount. Because as it stood for 25 years, the young black man who got caught with the equal amount of crack went up the river at a rate of 100-1 in terms of sentencing time, as compared to the white guy who talks with his teeth clenched and just sort of grinds him a little bit while the powder cocaine works. The bill already passed the Senate. They passed it in the House yesterday. But that didn't stop Representative Lamar Smith. Now, Lamar Smith is from, of course, Texas. And you're going to love this, Reverbo. This might be a bell-ringing moment. I don't know. I hate to ask for him. But he said he took to the House floor and screamed about the passage of the bill. Fair Sentencing Act of 2010. It's not just going to, you know, there's more of that preferential treatment. No, he said, despite the devastating impact crack cocaine has had on American communities, this bill reduces the penalties for crack cocaine. Why would we want to do that? We should not ignore the severity of crack addiction or ignore the differences between crack and powder cocaine trafficking. We should worry more about the victims than about the criminals. Why would we want to reduce the penalties for crack cocaine trafficking and invite a return to a time when cocaine ravaged our communities, especially minority communities, and them young black men was all over our white women's? No, I added that part. Especially minority communities. This bill sends the wrong message to them drug dealers and those who traffic in destroying American lives. Sends a message that Congress takes drug crimes less seriously than they did. The bill before us threatens to return America to the days when crack cocaine corroded the minds and bodies of our children and white women and decimated a generation of white women and destroyed communities of white women. I added all the white women, but, you know, it kind of fits, doesn't it?
Hold on a sec. You know, I think this whole bill sends the wrong message to our Negroes. That we're almost, for a second there, we were going to try to make things fair for them.
Now, we can't have that because the only thing they can hear through is their buttocks. And you gotta beat some sense into them in the prison complex so that they can be rented out to BP for 40 cents a day.
God, just the racism is just so blatant.
But you know what? President Obama says that because Shirley Sherrod got to talk to him after she got fired on a phonied up, dummied up, ginned up, rubed up, Breitbart video, that proves we're making great strides in race relations in America.
It does. It really does.
I found it inspiring.
Me too. Well, real quick, I just got two more news items you might have run into.
Do please.
There was an article I may have sent you from Alternet. I don't remember where. A long and insightful piece on the idea of a progressive presidency, or more to the point, liberal progressive reforms, are just not viable anymore. And these are due to a variety of things like structural conditions and the legacy of Bush and the Republicans and the sabotage of our financial institutions, making it almost a PR nightmare now to convince people that the only way out is to increase social spending. And it's almost an impossible task to do that. And it was kind of a depressing article, really. He went on to basically...
Yeah, that sounds a little bit like abandon hope, all ye who enter here.
Well, kind of. And, I mean, the end of the line here is how... Is the unmistakable fact that we've just elevated money to the highest motivating component in our political system. And that's just it. It's money and wealth are the highest incentives, the highest motivators. And so, you know, and the problem is that the Republicans have bought into that 100%. And that's how you get the wheels turning. And the Democrats, you know, about a quarter of them still sell you out, but three-quarters of them are still kind of idealistic and talk about not taking money from corporations. And even though, you know, there's no way you can even begin to run for the Senate without corporate sponsorship, even though there's no way to do any of this without the big money boys behind you. And that's what essentially the piece was. It was pretty dismaying.
Well, it kind of reminds me of what I heard at that first panel I attended at Netroots Nation, where Majora Carter and colleagues said, we're never going to have a big movement to save the environment or the people who live in it, like the civil rights movement in the 1960s, and there's just never going to be another one of those. Thank you.
Well, it does take forever to initiate and legislate, you know, social programs. Progressive social programs, and it really doesn't take any time at all to tear them down. I mean, my old, you know, analogy is, man, you can, it takes far less time to unload the truck than it does to load it. We certainly saw how quickly they unloaded the truck that Clinton left them. And, but the problem, yeah, it's really too bad because, you know, the you and I know, and people smarter than us know that money spent, the money that they need to spend on more stimulus money, actually that dollar creates more dollars. And so the recovery actually exponentially increases if you give people money in their pocket, or even if the government just puts people to work like they did in the Depression. You know, if I get a loan on a car, I buy a car, people have to build cars, and then they make money and they buy cars, da-da-da-da-da. But if all we're doing is just, building bullets and shipping them over to Afghanistan in combat boots, that generates no recovery.
Right, and waiting for the Chinese to start building cars. You realize those are going to start showing up on American shores probably in less than 2 years.
Well, yeah, probably. But, you know, the only way, it's just a PR nightmare now when you, when you've sabotaged it
thoroughly?
Thoroughly, thank you. It's just really hard to convince people that actually we need to spend more. And it doesn't matter if Paul Krugman is saying it. It doesn't matter if Galbraith is saying it. People are just stupid, short memories, and they don't. I mean, I don't know what.
That's a tough one to come down to, isn't it?
Well, I mean, it almost makes reform impossible. Was the point of this?
Yeah, there's another one of those parody songs we need to write to the tune of "People Are Strange." People are stupid.
I want to write that song that was going to star me and the Possum Squad. I don't know. What was that one?
Oh, God.
I can't find no job. It had to do with some kind of employment theme to it.
Yeah. It's going to take me a couple of more days of being back in the Eastern time zone before I'm completely well.
But if I can get the Possum Squad, if I can get those boys to quit drinking the whiskey and playing cards, we might actually have a rehearsal around here.
Yeah, is this here an ace or a card with a jam stain on it? Well, whatever it is, you're free to eat it and draw a new one.
Well, you know those boys. It's almost impossible getting them into the recording studio for 3 hours. They're just, you know what?
Just getting them sobered up to realize that there's recording to be done. Hey, by the way, I got to throw a line your way because you're going to appreciate this. I got a note from a buddy of mine, Paul, on Facebook, who had been contemplating the curse of Ayn Rand.
Okay.
And he said, say what you will about Vladimir Lenin and the Bolsheviks, but at least they managed to get Ayn Rand to leave Russia. You got to give them credit for that.
Well, you do. Oh, brother. That segues us into the final topic. And if this was Moran Monday.
Ah, the lightning round.
Nope, Moran Monday, I was going to nominate the entire state of Arizona. The entire state. Featuring Pamela Gorman. a candidate with an AK-47. Featuring the Grover Norquist model of legislation and government, of state government. Where, the entire state is now bankrupt, and they are too stubborn. They just simply will not raise revenues by raising taxes. They won't do it. They'd rather just slowly sink. Well, where would they sink? They'd probably just sink and float across the Rio Grande somehow, and I don't know where they'd end up. But they simply will not raise taxes on anything. And so they've just got mile after mile of bankrupt people and bankrupt institutions.
As far as the eye can see.
Oh, and Pamela Gorman, you have seen the Gorman ad, right?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, it's priceless.
made me want me an AK-47.
Well, where the hell did she get one? That's what I want to know.
Well, the thing is, though, that's a Chinese communist-made gun. Why ain't she supporting the American gun-making industry?
This was one of those states like South Carolina or like Mississippi where we always wonder just how come the demographics do not support this kind of legislative landscape. They don't. They should be just landsliding liberals and Democrats into the state legislature, and yet they don't.
But you and I both know the reason.
Because they cheat.
Well, not just because they cheat. They go to church on Sundays. And they get their marching orders out of the pulpit.
Well, they also redraw the districts. That's what this guy says.
Well, that's true, too.
And the primaries are the only thing that matters. The general election doesn't even matter anymore.
No.
So all these sunbirds, all these people that came down to Arizona years ago from the Northeast, all these, by the way, all these people I thought were liberal Democrats, they still live there, don't they?
But something happens when you move down into the Sun Belt or out west. Something happens to your mind in the heat.
Hmm.
And I'm going to say something here, and it's going to make somebody mad, and I don't mean to offend anybody. But, you know, everywhere I went in Las Vegas, all the service jobs were held by people with names like Maria and Rosaria and Luis and Gomez. Oh. And it was a completely different world from the world I live in, where the low-paying jobs were traditionally held by African-American folks. You know, because that's the way we fixed the economic dodge. That's the way we rigged the game. Those were the brakes that we put on the wheel. And
those were the bones that we threw the black people.
Yeah. And you know what? What was amazing to me, though, is that I went out west, and all of a sudden I was hearing people talking about Hispanic folks the way that I had heard racists and bigots in Alabama talk about African-American people. And I thought, Jesus Christ, we've got an entire class of people in this country who really don't see shades or tones of color. They have become a colorblind society. They look down at their own skin, and anything darker than them is one of them. You know, them people, what's ruining America?
It's just variations on a theme.
I mean, I could go for hours on just the scales that fell away from my eyes about immigration. I thought I was liberal on immigration until I went to Las Vegas. Now I'm uber liberal. I don't believe in borders anymore. Borders are bullshit, imaginary lines drawn across a blazing desert. You know, I tried to explain to one fellow, I said, you want to talk about them and they and America and freedom? I said, in 1803, Thomas Jefferson signed the Louisiana Purchase, and in the course of from 1159 to 1201, people who were subjects of the French crown were suddenly Americans. And they never moved. But here's the fun part. Jefferson wanted no part whatsoever of extending the vote to them. And the same thing happened at the stroke of 1201 with the so-called Gadsden Purchase, which was done at the point of a gun.
What was that one all about?
You know, that's Arizona, New Mexico, California, Nevada, Utah, you know.
Oh, that was a sweet one.
And you know, I'm just thunderstruck by it all. But this country cannot function without some class of people of darker skin upon whom downward the white people look. And get to go home and bitch about them taking their services. Can't go to the emergency room no more without 500 of them illegal immigrants sitting there, and I gotta wait for the doctor. I'm taking up all my medicine and my services.
Oh, God. You know, people have to do what I did. You have to go down to Mexico for 10 days and actually see.
Well, by God, if you go down to Mexico, they won't tolerate your white American ass down there for very long. They'll be shipping you back, Buster. Got that one, too.
Well, that's just a bunch of brain-dead idiots talking there. They couldn't have been nicer to me. And they were excellent. They're great hosts. I mean, I didn't go to Tijuana, right? I went down to Guadalajara in the south. I was in the midst of Mexico. And it's an entirely different world down there than it is driving around, you know, North Carolina and seeing nothing but Mexicans roofing houses and doing landscaping work. It's a whole different universe down there.
Indeed, indeed. And you know what? Yeah. It's on the list someday.
Well, I mean, Bajan loves it down there, you know.
Yeah, for good reason.
Yeah, for excellent reasons. And I told you, the only thing that they objected to when I sort of pushed them, my Spanish is horrible, but some of them talk fairly better English than I spoke Spanish. And, you know me, I just dive right into these political conversations with these people. And all they basically said, their biggest peeve was when outsiders or Westerners, and this was their word, acted imperially. They didn't cotton to that.
Yeah, when you yell the English louder because if I just scream at you, you'll get it the second time.
You know, everything that word connotes.
And you know right? what? It's so funny that Americans would have a hard time comprehending that reverbo because. And especially Americans in the South. You know, there's an old saying down South that there's three kinds of Yankees. There's Yankees, and those are people from the North who come down South and then go back home. And there's damn Yankees who come down South and stay a little bit longer and then go back home. And then there's goddamn Yankees who come down South and stay. And they sit around saying, well, you know, you don't really want to make your cornbread that way.
Well, that's the way the Mexicans feel, too.
And that's, yeah, exactly. Nobody wants somebody else coming into their culture and telling them they're getting it wrong. You know what, if y'all just had a right to work law down here.
Well, you wouldn't imagine that extends to places like, I don't know, Afghanistan?
You know, I think it probably does.
My
guess is.
Start putting rich white people in jail. That'll fix the whole Mexican immigration problem.
See, that's, you know, if you start doing, if you come up with some really hateful laws like, you know, life sentences for contractors who pull up to the job in their Corvette while they're paying undocumented immigrants, you know, a dollar a day, put the guy with the Corvette in prison for about 50 years and watch that crap dry up in a hurry. But you know what? That reminds me, though, Reverbo, there is a step in the right direction. Because that sleazy bastard Shalom Rubishkin at the meat packing plant in Postville, Iowa, some bitch went up for 28 years.
Nice.
But here's the kick. I remember going over this on the show. You may not have been listening. He didn't go up for 28 years for abusing undocumented immigrants. He went up for 28 years for abusing banks.
Well, we'll take it.
Yeah.
I mean, ultimately, you'll take it. I mean, you'll take, well, they only got Capone for tax evasion, we'll take that, too.
Exactly. Hey, Reverbo, I got a roll, brother, but it was great hearing from you.
Okay, yeah, I just wanted to catch in with you, because I've been kind of off the radar for a while. And so
you have been. You know, we worry.
So, I got a, working on another column, so I'll be in touch, so, take it easy. I might be able to check into the front porch Friday tomorrow. You're going to be on the air?
I'm going to be here.
All right. Well, very good.
I wouldn't miss it.
All right. Well, I know you'll make it personal, too.
As do you. Take care.
All right.
Later. Bye now. Cavalcade of Crazy Correspondent at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. That's Reverbo. And it's time to go. I got to tell you one thing, though. Please. You can't see it on the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com website anymore, but you got to go see a picture. If you go to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com and look at the show post for today, there is a link to a Ken Ward blog post about, I'm not on about the content of the particular piece that Ken wrote, although he's an excellent journalist and a superior investigator. You got to see the smile on the face of West Virginia's junior senator, Cart Goodwin. This may very well be the creepiest photograph I've ever seen. The title of the post is Senators Rockefeller Goodwin Introduce Mine Safety Bill. Look at the thing that passes for a smile on Cart Goodwin. He's Joe Manchin's creature. Look at the smile on his face. And you can't help asking, Senator Rockefeller, where's your other hand? Because Cart Goodwin is, after all, a puppet. You can also link to Ken's post via my Facebook page. You can find it that way. This is the creepiest photograph of a politician I have ever seen, and that includes Republicans. Go look. I wouldn't make such a big deal out of it if it wasn't just the ickiest thing I've ever seen. So that's it for tonight. Thanks to everybody who makes the horn go. Thanks to Lottie in the chat room, to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to Texas Betsy, our blogger. Reverbo, as noted, is our cavalcade of crazy correspondent at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Matt Osborne is in Southeastern somewhere. He is our Southeast correspondent, Osborne Inc., OSBORNEINK.com. Hope he's home safely by now. David in Tennessee is my head writer. Our continuing best wishes go out to Judy Bonds in her her struggle against monstrous cancer. Continue your good thoughts. Continue your prayers if you're the praying sort. The program is brought to you in part by Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. They are the bravest, hardest working folks that I know. We're thinking about you, Judy. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy!
Well, dadgum if it didn't thorn in the side Thursday. Just trying that out periodically to see if it sticks. A theme that was kindly suggested to me on Facebook by Horst. Thorn in the side Thursday. An indirect reference, if you will, to a series of events in Joseph Heller's Catch-22. It is Thursday at the Horn. It's Thursday in a lot of different places, on at least this side of the planet. It's already Friday on the other side, so happy Friday to y'all.